This is Jim Alger, and this is Common Sense.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
Why do the Republicans hate America?
Their only play right now in Congress is to hope the Democratic Party fails.
It's not even us in the U.S. It's us in China now.
It's us in China.
It's going to be us.
It's us, Russia, and China.
It's us, the EU. We are in the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
The buzzword of the day is not torture. The buzzword of the day is enhanced interrogation techniques. Can we just agree to call it torture?
Ask what you can do for your country.
Hope you're having a great day in Washington, D.C., or wherever in the world you're tuning the show in today. This is Common Sense, the show that cuts through the spin of the anti-American right-wing nuts and brings it to you straight.
During our show, we'll help you, the listener, try and understand the week's events and what we as a nation can do about it. Our job here is not to change your mind, but provide political perspective and act as your voice to power.
In short, we are here to have a discussion and help you replace the spin with common sense. 1-888-228-4494, 888-228-4494 is our phone number. You are listening to Common Sense Radio with Jim, Mike, and Chris. How is everyone today?
It's been a strange day. I have been sort of on and off following the elections in Iran and among other things. Long day.
The elections in Iran, my understanding is everyone's claiming victory right now.
Yes. Well, can't have an election without having a Coleman, right?
Fantastic. Do they have a court in Iran that they can tie the election up in for?
Well, the Interior Ministry is putting out, says partial results put Ahmadinejad ahead, but reformist rivals also claiming victory, so... Ahmadinejad may be winning, or he may not be winning. So it's very interesting to see what's going on out there.
You know, I'd like to see as an independent look at the election system there, and you know, how clean, how straightforward do they think it is? From my understanding, they have a religious council in Iran, and they are non-elected, and then they select people that can run for the elected office, and then those. You know, go to election, and those are chosen by the general population. You know, they're chosen by the people. And I must admit, I don't know the interplay, how much power each has, but I know that this person is not the president there in the same capacity as our president is here, but it's still an office of importance.
Right.
And it's interesting to see what the results of, there's been a lot of theory that Barack Obama's speech in Cairo was going to turn things around over there and may have played a part in the Lebanese elections.
Yeah, I remember we spoke about that briefly last week. His attempt looks like it was successful to win hearts and minds. I certainly don't think it can hurt. I think it was a good move on his part. And, you know, hopefully it'll bear some fruit. If it did this quickly, wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah, we already have a question on Twitter that's asking Ahmadinejad lead is 69%, and how can that be? It's coming from Sissy Build. And,
I think that's what he's claiming, 69%. Or
the official result from Iran right now. But I don't know if that is going to hold. And as we often see on our election nights, some people declare victory when they shouldn't ask Norm Coleman.
Well, yeah.
I hope that would hold. I was getting some positive vibe there from Iran. A lot of people felt that he was embarrassing them. You know, a little bit familiar.
Yeah, he's basically their Bush.
Running around denying the Holocaust and whatnot, and a lot of people felt that in Iran that he was not a good representative of them, wanted him out. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be nice to see him defeated by somebody more moderate? You know, hopefully we'll get to see that.
Yeah, well, Mousavi's platform basically was the economy and, you know, the interior issues, as opposed to Nutjob, who his entire focus is just, you know, lambasting the West and you know, America is the most evil thing. And, you know, while that's all, you know, well and good for the sound bites, it's doing nothing for their country.
No, not much. That's for sure.
Amazing how similar the politics can be.
I do like their well, I shouldn't say like, the tongue in cheek. I appreciate their version of democracy. Apparently, the interior minister who oversees the voting has banned all rallies and political gatherings until the results are announced on Saturday.
Well, that'll be interesting to see how. I mean, it's really going to be interesting to see how this whole thing pans out.
Well, yeah, because it has a lot of far-reaching, you know, implications. If Nut Job continues, then we still, you know, seriously need to worry about his focus on nuclear.
And we're looking at wider implications as well. We're looking at, you know, will groups that are more extreme, fundamentalist groups, be able to convince people that that they represent them, that they're on their side, and the West is evil? If we can chip away at that, we can make it harder for these type of groups to gain influence across the board. We're talking, you know, Hamas. Hamas has been winning elections, and hopefully we'll see that not continue. And it would be nice.
Well, I think they're actually having their very own Gore slash, well, I should say 2000/2004 and 08 Coleman campaign, because I'm getting information stating that voters were blocked from entering the poll stations, and they shut down some polling stations. So since Achma Kuku over there is in charge, that just really wouldn't surprise me.
No, it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be incredibly interesting to see how the whole thing works out. The fact that it's not an open and shut case already is pretty good. It's definitely good news. So we got to see how this is going on. There is another story going on right now that I want to talk about, and that is that gas prices at the pump are on their way up, even though oil prices are back down again.
Oh, yeah, let's take a minute to complain about that. I've been noticing that myself, having to do a lot of running around in the Los Angeles area. They've been creeping that up for weeks, you know, and it doesn't seem to be justified. Here we've seen gasoline or oil, which the price of gasoline is supposedly based on, go from 140 at its crazy peak, and at that point gas out here was selling for almost $5, and then we've seen it to decline all the way down under $2, and now they're back up. They're almost to $3 again. And it, you know, and you look at the price of a barrel of oil, if I'm not mistaken, is still around $65. I don't know that you really justify $3 a gallon off of that.
Well, yeah, I don't think that you justify it either, but you know, the economy, as far as analyzing those numbers, it's really not my strong suit. I kind of just complain about it when it happens.
Yeah, pretty much. They control. They can charge what they want. I notice also it's interesting. There's a large regional factor. I'll tell you something that happened to me that was kind of funny. I went to Las Vegas recently. I was riding around in a cab and I looked at the gas prices, and I made some comment like, "Well, it's not so bad out here." And he said, "You're from California." Like, how do you know that? And he's like, well, the people that come from the West Coast say that gas is less expensive here. People that come from the East say it's more. So you have this trend, I guess, at least in that area, of it getting more and more expensive. I know there are some real reasons for that. For example, the oxygenation of the gasoline and the requirements that California puts. But it's pretty complicated issue if you look into it, but it still seems like they're just price gouging. They're just getting away with what they can get away with, knowing that we're leading to the run-up to summer where the usage is going to go up.
Well, I think they may also be trying to just get as much of the profits as they can before all these environmental changes take place.
And by that, you're referring to the
CAFE standards.
The increased fuel economy and the, yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be very, I tend to use a term that's going to be interesting a lot, but that's because things that we talk about generally are interesting.
Going to be interesting. Well, if anybody ran out and bought an SUV again because they saw the price drop, well, couldn't have expected that to last very long, but here it's going up again already.
Damn it, you mean I got to bring that Hummer back?
Bring that Hummer back. But interesting news on the sideline there. Apparently, a Chinese industrial company that had not been formally involved in transportation has purchased the Humvee license in that from General Motors. And then Penske Automotive, you might be familiar with that name. I believe they distribute the Mini as well, has bought Saturn.
He's in Philadelphia.
From he is?
Yeah, he is. He's one of those up by the bootstraps kind of story guy. He came from a poor family and everything, and he ended up buying this one auto dealership, and then that ended up turning into what we now know as the Penske product line.
Right. I mean, I recognize that name from, I believe, racing, and I just recently learned that they were distributing the Mini in the United States, but I knew them more from auto parts and whatnot. And racing.
Yeah, he's expected to buy Saturn.
Yeah.
And that's...
Plates will continue, though we don't know if that means that they'll continue to manufacture in the United States or if they'll subcontract it out or how exactly it's going to be. But as GM gets smaller, it looks like those brands will survive, just not under the GM name.
Yes.
Well, as
there's the GM, won't they?
I was going to say, as someone who grew up in Philadelphia, from what I've heard, he's real, real pro-union and pro-America. So I'm hopeful that he stays true to that and, you know, keeps Americans, American jobs in America.
That's promising. Some hopeful news. What I had heard, I made a statement that they're going to purchase from GM for the time being. They're going to subcontract it to GM, but then they were looking at other suppliers. So we don't, at this point, know what other means.
Yeah, it's we'll have to see. It's a shame to see what's happened to Detroit. And hopefully, as they come up the backside of this, it'll be much, much better. 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. We have to go make sure we can keep the lights on here, so we'll see you in the back end of the break.
At Chrysler, we build Viewmasters. We build security cameras. We build troop transports. We build moving vans. We build TV stations. We build the 25 mile per gallon Chrysler Town and Country. Come see what we're building for you.
Winter Regional Airport is a key factor for our small town.
The airport is incredibly important to our business. Customers come in with planes and we go out with planes.
Now, a Washington plan to dramatically increase fees on general aviation threatens thousands of airports and a million jobs.
We're isolated, and we absolutely need these airports.
If this airport shut down, it'd be devastating for the town of Winter.
We'd absolutely lose jobs.
Get involved. General aviation serves America. Let's keep it that way.
Have you added up all the hidden costs behind Walmart's prices? The estimated $1.8 billion taxpayers shell out for health care because Walmart doesn't cover their employees. The lost wages of 1.6 million women who had to take Walmart to court to get paid the same as men. The countless manufacturing jobs lost while America's largest corporation became America's biggest importer of Chinese goods. Behind Walmart's profits, the middle class pays the price. America can't afford it any longer.
Hey, oh, let's go! Let's go. The bombing in the daytime. The going through a side one. The kids on the dilemma.
888-228-4494. 888-228-4494. This is the new and improved Common Sense Radio. Brought to you courtesy of Mike. I am your host, Jim. And we also have Chris on the phone. How is everyone today? We are going to be talking about tobacco legislation clears Congress is our next topic up. And for those listening, coming up next, after the next break, we have a celebrity guest. Mike Farrell is with us today from, you guys might remember him from the TV show MASH. and he is going to be discussing healthcare. So we have a very good conversation. The first of two guests on the healthcare situation coming up here in about 15, 20 minutes or so.
And Mike Farrell, he played Hawkeye on MASH. Is that
he
correct?
He played B.J. Honeycutt.
Honeycutt, okay.
Hawkeye was Adam Alan Alda.
Alan Alda, okay. Getting the two confused there, but I know he was one of the two main doctor characters on the program.
So in a healthcare related subject for sure, this tobacco legislation's cleared Congress. It seems like the president's pretty close to getting what he wants on this one. They are looking at putting the tobacco industry under the regulation of the FDA, which can severely curb their abilities to advertise, as well as other things regarding what they put in their product. And some people view this as a good thing, and some people view this as, well, we're just creating a sin tax, and it's not such a good thing.
Oh, haven't we already done that part, though?
Well, that doesn't necessarily make it a good thing, though. So
those are the only things that politicians find very easy to tax, is they go for more and more taxes on alcohol and cigarettes and whatnot because they get the least resistance. But we push that tax probably as high as we can. Generally, though, I see bringing any type of product like this that is transferring a drug to the human body, in this case nicotine, it should be under the FDA. I wish I had the exact legislation to cite, but not too far in the distant past, there was passed a bill that basically took the vitamin and supplement market out from under the FDA, and now we are seeing a barrage of weight loss and pills that are supposed to give you some kind of sexual, and we're seeing that absolutely flood on the market with very little regulation without having to prove that they actually do what they claim they're doing, and I think it's a bad thing.
You're not going to give any arguments from me on that one. It's they all these things that we end up ingesting into our system that are no good for us, and I don't know how, what allowed them to start marketing all of a sudden. Anyway, we're seeing a flood of marketing take place on drugs. I don't see it so much on cigarettes.
And the email. Well, cigarettes do have limitations already to where they can advertise. I believe they're not allowed to do radio and television advertising, and there was even a stink. So that, if I'm remembering this correctly, they would sponsor, say, race cars, like NASCAR or whatnot, and then the race cars would end up on television, and that was kind of their underhanded way of getting on television without buying a television ad spot. So they are pretty heavily restricted already. I'm not sure exactly what the FDA is going to do. Maybe we don't really know yet, as far as furthering that regulation, but they already are operating under limitations as to where
they're going. Well, it's safe to say they're not going to loosen them up.
I think that's a pretty safe assumption. Another way that they advertise a lot is by product placement. I mean, how many Hollywood movies have you seen where the character smokes like a train throughout the entire movie, and you really have, sometimes you don't even consciously realize that that's an advertisement.
This is... Well, we see Hollywood, for whatever reason, is not getting with this program at all.
No.
I remember that they had a big stink about Joe Camel because they're saying, you know, that since he's like a cartoon character, that he was basically advertising to children. And I remember, you know, years ago when cigarette commercials were on TV, that they just made it seem cool and, you know, hey, be like me kind of thing. The whole point of advertising, obviously. And the thing is, what can they say now? Hey, buy our product. We know it gives you cancer.
That well, I mean, you know what's interesting is up in Canada, they have big warnings on the side. And half the box is the warning. But it
much larger
cancer.
Warning than ours?
Much, much, but 5-6 times larger.
So Chris has a good point also with the marketing to children. Not only do you have the cartoon character angle, but, pardon me, they're doing a lot of things such as flavorings. I noticed they're trying to, out here in California, for example, although a certain amount of people still smoke, the chewing tobacco is a lot less popular. And I noticed they're trying to push it now, and they've added flavorings to it, mint and candy flavorings and whatnot, to try to to market this to a new group and to try to market it to children.
Here's my question. How do you feel about the argument that we're just taxing something that we don't like, and we're just trying to stop something that we don't like, and therefore, you know, if it's cigarettes today, maybe it's going to be, you know, McDonald's cheeseburgers tomorrow. Which a good argument can be made for that, by the way.
There is some truth to that, but I mean, you run the risk of anything being taken too far. But I don't hold it against government when they want to discourage something that is as purely harmful as smoking cigarettes. I mean, we've decided that it's a legal product. We've decided that people are going to be allowed to do it. But that doesn't mean we're not going to discourage it. We're not going to inform people what they're doing. At least with the McDonald's cheeseburger, you could argue that that does have nutritional value. It does have calories. It does have proteins, carbohydrates, and whatnot. Yes, perhaps it's too salty. Perhaps it has too high fat content. It can lead to other problems if you abuse it. But on the cigarettes, it's pretty much no win. They don't have any value except for the effect that they produce that people like and the negative health effects. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that cigarette smoking is the number one identifiable cause, direct cause of cancer.
Yes. And not only that, it also increases your blood pressure. It decreases your circulation. So people who are already at risk for other problems, you know, if you have diabetes and you're smoking, that just increases your chance of having a stroke or having a heart attack. So it's one of those it's something that, you know, okay, as a product – or as a part of the American economy, it's good for taxing, you know, or for a tax base, and it's good for the jobs or the people who harvest the tobacco and whatnot. But for Americans, you know, consumers, it has no positives. It's a complete health risk.
I agree with you 100%.
Well, I don't know if it's a risk so much as it's a catastrophe. It just seems like there's no way to win on that one. I mean, nothing good comes out of cigarette smoking.
And one could also argue that there's another thing that we should say here. When the state decides to tax it, they're not only taxing it because they can get away with it easy. And well, let me put it this way. One of their justifications for the extremely high tax is the cost. You know, treating people with emphysema is very expensive, and the health effects that the state then has to take up the payment for justify a very, very high tax on the product.
Well, yes, but could that argument – I mean, I'm just kind of trying to play a little bit of devil's advocate here. Could that argument not be made on anything?
Well, you would have to show that the other product would have, you know, such a cost to the state.
Well, when they got sued, didn't they have to? They had to pay millions to every state because I forget the details of the lawsuit, but I believe it went something to the effect of, "Hey, you tobacco industry knew that you had the research that proved that there was a link to your product or from your product to cancer, and you never." You never told that, say, the FDA who...
A cover-up?
I'm sorry?
Didn't they get in trouble basically for a cover-up for, you know, knowing that, you know, finding out the health risks and then denying it and telling people the opposite?
Right, yes. And so they, what eventually ended up coming about as a result of their lawsuit was that they had to pay the states who were in on the lawsuit millions of dollars, and, you know, as much money as they had to pay, and it was rather enormous, it still doesn't cover the cost. It you know, the state can't recoup the money that they've spent and the money that they will continue to spend as a result of the tobacco industry's cover-up of the cancer link, and they're continuing people's continuing addiction to nicotine.
We have some comments on the Twitter, and Natalie Walker 84 says, as someone who has recently quit smoking, I think that putting tobacco under control of the FDA is a good move. And Sweet Great Mom says that cigarette bill will be signed by Obama. This is a step in the right direction. So we got the Twitterverse is being heard from here.
Being supportive?
Well, I think that generally speaking, they will be supportive. But I have heard the other side of the argument, which is that this is the majority trying to oppress a minority group, be it cigarette smokers in this case. And what I find very ironic is that most people who make that claim are the Republicans because they're free marketers. They have no problem oppressing gays, but they have a problem with oppressing smokers. I just wanted to bring that up there. I just figured I'd throw the knife in because I had a chance.
Yeah,
cheap shot of the day for me, ladies and gentlemen. Cheap shot of the day. 888-228-4494 is our phone number. 888-228-4494. We're going to be having Mike Farrell on here in a few moments to talk about health care. And as right now we are discussing the issue of the smoking bill working its way through Congress and the placing of the tobacco industry under the realm of the FDA. Is it a good thing, bad thing? You know, what do you think about it? So we got about another minute or so before we go to break.
Well, I can remember you can make the argument, how does it go when they came for the communists, I didn't care because I wasn't a communist. And when they came for the, and then say that, well, we're just kind of going after smokers and we don't care because we're not smokers. But smoking is one of those things that you're really not just affecting yourself. You're affecting everyone around you. I mean, if anybody remembers back a few decades when they were allowed to smoke in bars, they were allowed to smoke in restaurants, they were smoking in buildings, and they would literally do ridiculous things like sit you on the other side of a 4-foot-tall barrier, and that's the non-smoking section.
Because the smoke knows where to stop, my friend. It was smart smoke.
And I've been cheering these kind of efforts on all along, to not to tell people that they can't smoke, but to think of the rights of the people who don't want to either.
I think this is a definite victory for little people, because for so long the tobacco industry has had their control with the monopoly via lobbyists over Congress. And if you look back at the history of tobacco, the Surgeon General knew for almost 5 decades now that cigarette smoking was linked to cancer. And it's only now that we're having an accountability here.
888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. After the break, we'll have Mike Farrell on Star of MASH. See you in two.
Let's be completely honest. No company wants to go through this. But we're not witnessing the end of the American car. We're witnessing the rebirth of the American car. General Motors needs to start over in order to get stronger. There was a time when 8 different brands made sense. Not anymore. There was a time when our cost structure could compete worldwide. Not anymore. Reinvention is the only way we can fix this. And fix it, we will. So here's what the new GM is going to be. Fewer, stronger brands. Fewer, stronger models. Greater efficiencies. Better fuel economy. And new technologies. Leaner, greener, faster, smarter. This is not about going out of business. This is about getting down to business. Because the only chapter we're focused on is chapter one.
General Aviation serves 5,000 small to mid-sized airports, providing an economic lifeline for communities across America. Millions of jobs and large and small businesses depend on General Aviation. A Washington, D.C. plan for costly new fees could shut down community airports and impact over 1 million jobs. Your help is needed. Get involved. General Aviation serves America. Let's keep it that way.
Thank you.
On October 26, 1982, NBC aired the first episode of a medical drama set in urban Boston St. Allegius Hospital. This is one of the first serious looks at a healthcare system that represented the decaying hospital derogatorily nicknamed St. Elsewhere, a term used to describe hospitals that serve patients, mostly the uninsured, not wanted by other institutions. While the show is a dramatic comedy, there is nothing funny about this country's as-of-yet emerging healthcare crisis. Now we sit, a Chicago Hope ER, and nearly 30 years later, and those fictional problems on TV are becoming way too real for far too many Americans. In homes across the country tonight, people are choosing between eating dinner and taking their medication. As costs continue to rise, needed treatment deferred, and facilities continue to close, more and more Americans are finding that their last resort is the emergency room of their very own St. Elsewhere. It is becoming increasingly clear that something has to be done. Our first guest tonight is Mike Farrell. He's not a doctor, but he played one on TV. Mr. Farrell, how are you today?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Well, thank you very much for joining us. We're doing great. You have taken up the cause of single-payer health care as of late, and a lot of our guests, a lot of our listeners don't even know what single-payer health care is. Could you?
Yeah. Well, as the name suggests, single-payer health care is simply a process by which health care is provided to people by professionals, doctors, nurses, et cetera. And instead of going through a health insurance company, the billing would go to a single unit, in this case a national organization, much like Medicare, so that the billing would be done straight from the provider to the organization that pays the bills, and the individuals who are in need of the health care would get all the health care they need without having to go through the hoops that are established today by medical insurance companies. And it would be considerably cheaper because we'd eliminate the issue of profit and executive bonuses and salaries and paperwork and things that are have created the problem we have today.
Right. Mr. Farrell, this is Mike here. I had a very basic question for you. Why do they call it single payer?
I believe because there are 1,200 insurance companies today that are operating as blocks between the doctor and the patient. You have to deal with, first of all, passing the test that the insurance company provides in order to get the doctor to talk to you, and then the doctor has to argue for whether or not what he wants or she wants to do for you is applicable and acceptable to the insurance company at that time. The single-payer idea, and the reason it has come to be called single-payer, just eliminates all of that nonsense, as is the case, as most people over 65 know, with Medicare.
Oh, I was just about to ask you, so it'd be simpler to Medicare or Medicaid or whatnot?
Exactly. Some people call it Medicare for All.
Right.
Yeah, that's what it is in the ads. It's Medicare for All, everyone in, nobody out, if I remember correctly. It's really, really good soundbite. It encapsulates it. What do you think the odds are of actually getting this through Congress? Because it certainly doesn't seem like the president is on board with this idea. It certainly seems like the insurance industry is pushing really hard. I mean, because it would really put them pretty much out of business.
Well, it wouldn't put them out of business. It would certainly put them out of the healthcare industry business, but, insurance companies would have all kinds of other areas. And within the area of health, they would have the opportunity to provide special services, cosmetic surgery, elective surgery, that sorts of things that could be done through a medical insurance setup if they wanted it. Actually, President Obama, when he was a senator in Illinois, openly supported a single-payer healthcare system. And he talked about it a bit when he was campaigning. Since he's been in the White House, obviously he's been made subject to a lot of the pressures and probably has become far more aware of the political difficulties associated with getting a single-payer system. And in one of his town hall meetings not long ago, he said, when asked about why he didn't support or wouldn't support a single-payer system, he said, "If we were starting from scratch, I would support it, but we're not starting from scratch. We already have a system in effect, so that we have to figure out a way to make that work." What he seems to be holding out for is a what they call a public component within his healthcare plan, which we haven't fully seen yet. And that public component would be effectively the beginning step, it seems to me, of a single-payer-like or a government-sponsored or government-run healthcare component, wherein the people who can't afford health insurance, people who don't have health coverage for any one of any number of reasons, we have 45 million people in this country who don't have health care today because they can't qualify, they can't afford it, etc., those kinds of people would probably fall into that group. At least that would give us the first step toward what I think is really necessary and appropriate would be a single-payer system for everybody.
Mr. Farrell, this is Chris here.
Hi.
I'm with you on this, but I have a quote from the American Medical Association regarding single-payer, and they say that the plan threatens to restrict patient choice by driving out private insurers, and that it would likely lead to an explosion of costs that would need to be absorbed by taxpayers. So what do you say to that?
Well, first of all, the AMA made that maybe that statement. It made some negative statements a couple of days ago, and then the next day contradicted itself and said maybe we're not so sure we object. So they need to get their themselves straightened out. First, give me those 2 points again, because I think each of them are interesting. The first one was that it would crowd out people
that it threatens to restrict patient choice by driving out the private insurers.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the single-payer system that I'm advocating would do just the reverse. It would give the patients all choices. Today, the people that are restricting patients' choices are the insurance companies, who say that certain doctors aren't acceptable, certain procedures aren't acceptable, they won't cover certain things. So we would eliminate all of those restrictions under a single-payer system. So the AMA has it exactly upside down. And the other issue I think they raised is that of cost.
Yes, that it would likely lead to an explosion of costs that would need to be absorbed by the taxpayers.
Yeah, I think that's simply propaganda, and it probably comes from the insurance industry. Because the costs today, everybody acknowledges that in today's healthcare system, 30% of the costs involved in Americans' healthcare is involved with paperwork, with profits, and with executive salaries and bonuses. So we would eliminate, by eliminating the medical insurance industry that stands between the patient and the doctor, we would eliminate 30% of the costs off the top. Now, a single-payer system that is government, wherein the government is the single-payer, would be paid for by taxes, would be paid for by people's income taxes or whatever kind of taxes were established for that. And as has been shown in France and in Canada and in any number of other countries around the world that use a single-payer form of system, it is a far cheaper way to provide better health care.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I don't know why no one ever mentions that ultimately because of the uninsured who have to go to the emergency rooms for their primary care, essentially they drive up the costs and, you know, for everything that you want to say, about, oh, it's unfair for taxpayers to have this burden on them. The taxpayers and the people who pay into insurance, who have insurance, are the ones who ultimately end up paying because their prices are – they're charged more. The hospitals have to make up that money somehow.
Yes, no, absolutely. You know, the God bless the people that do the emergency medical services in the medical emergency rooms around the country, but that is the most expensive way for people to get their health care rather than in being involved in a program that provides care when they need it and educates them about preventive health kinds of practices. And we're already paying for that. That's one of the reasons that the health care system is so expensive in this country. We are our system is far more expensive to the individual taxpayer and the individual consumer in this country than is the healthcare system in most other countries, most other advanced countries in the world. And we rank, although people would tell you we have the best system in the world, in fact, we rank far below many other countries that have the kinds of systems that we're talking about here.
I wonder if you could speak on this subject for a moment. How do people in the healthcare industry feel about this, or do they not know much about it? Like, if you spoke to doctors, hospitals, hospital administrators or whatnot, do they dislike the current system, or how do they feel about this, or do they even know?
Well, I think you'll find a mix of opinions, as you suggested with the quote from the American Medical Association, which we have to understand is a lobby. But the people that brought me into the question, the people that have educated me about the issue, are doctors and nurses. The California Nurses Association did a big demonstration and a lobbying day in D.C. Last month, of which I was part, talking about the fact that insurance companies and the regulations that are laid on by the insurance companies today prevent them from doing the kind of health care that they want to do. Doctors say the same thing. Most medical professionals find themselves spending a lot of time filling out paperwork so that their patients do qualify for certain kinds of coverage, or arguing with the healthcare insurance people about what they're able to provide for their patients. They would very much appreciate, I think, getting the insurance companies out of the way so that they can deal directly with their patients and not have to worry about who meets what standard. When you have the single-payer system, you would simply have the doctor and the patient being able to deal one with the other, and the bill going to the single-payer unit and being being paid by that unit. The other thing that would happen, and I think it's important for people to understand in a single-payer situation, is that if it were the U.S. government, for example, that would allow the U.S. government to do what the Bush administration specifically disallowed, which is negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies and bring the prices of these medications down. It's well known that many people in the United States are going to Canada, for example, for their prescription drugs because they are so much cheaper in Canada than they are in the United States. And the reason is that the Canadian government, which controls their healthcare delivery system, negotiates with the insurance, with the pharmaceutical companies for the cost of the drugs that are provided.
Right, and I can actually speak on this to a certain degree because I'm a paramedic. I've worked as part of in the hospital and as part of the emergency medical response team in New Jersey. But the two points that I wanted to make in regards to what you said are that you're exactly right with the private insurance that we have right now. Doctors are limited in what prescriptions they can write. For example, if you have insurance A and the doctor says, okay, well, you need to take cholesterol medication, he can't just write for whatever. I mean, he can. Obviously, he can write for it, but the patient's insurance will only cover X, Y, and Z medications. So if he wants to, you know, prescribe something else, then that patient has to pay out of pocket, you know. And the other thing, doctors are limited in the days of the days in the hospital that he can have a patient, because insurance mandates will say, okay, well, we're going to pay for you to have your patient in the hospital for 3 days. Well, in 3 days, you know, that patient may or may not be ready to be discharged, but if they need an extra day or two, then the hospital loses money, and the doctor, you know, it goes, it's sad, but it's a fact that the hospital then says, hey, you know, why couldn't, you know, back to the doctor, why can't you get your patient out in 3 days?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly the case. So you've got the hospitals whose situations are dictated by the insurance companies and the doctors whose situations are dictated by the insurance companies actually practicing medicine when they really don't have either the information, the training, the experience, or the right to do that. They're saying, as you've just suggested, well, no, you don't. Your patient doesn't need another day in the hospital. It doesn't need another element of care. It doesn't need this particular drug that you want. Pardon me?
I said, and those insurance companies won't pay. So when you talk about, you know, oh, I'm covered, I have insurance. Well, yeah, you do, you know, you may have insurance and you might think that you're safe in that. Except that if, you know, you do exceed those days in the hospitals, you are then driving up the health care costs for everyone because the hospital has to absorb the extra time. And, you know, it's not a hotel, it's a hospital. It's right. Not $100 per night, you know. You're paying for care, round the clock nursing care and medications and God knows what else, you know, is right. Wrong with you. So,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mike, thank you very much for coming today. It's really great to see someone like you get involved in this because, I mean, you're a guy who, I don't presume to know your finances, but I got to think you're doing okay for yourself. You don't need to be involved in something like this. And when someone like yourself steps up and gets in this, it says a lot about you.
Well, we definitely
appreciate you joining us today. Mike Farrell, star of MASH, talking about single-payer health care. You want to plug your website right quick before I let you go?
MikeFarrell.org is a personal website if anybody wants to ask a question.
Okay, will do. Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate you joining us.
But if I might, health-justice.org is the website that people should go to get questions about the single-payer system.
All right, healthjustice.org. Thank you very much, Mike Farrell. Greatly appreciate your call.
I hope to work just one job for a change.
I hope to have some health care for a change.
I hope to be able to save a little for a change.
We voted on Election Day for hope and change. Now it's time for action. The Employee Free Choice Act lets workers choose to join a union to earn better pay, health benefits, and job security. The Employee Free Choice Act. It's time the economy worked for everyone again.
Welcome to my It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. You know, some days are just random tweet days. From Pundidiot Joe Scarborough after Obama's Cairo speech,
I have a man crush on Barack Obama. There are quite a few liberals who would disagree. It was a great speech.
Hey, Joe. Is that your mic, or are you just happy to see Obama? Sam Cedar tweeted, I am in America, and I am an American. If Obama's in an Arab country, can there be any doubt he is an Arab? Karen Dalton Beninato said, Lindsey Graham offended by Sotomayor's speech as an everyday white guy, as opposed to guys who are only white on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Joshua of the Joshua blog said, decided to flip to MSNBC to see Matthew's Obama speech reaction. And there was racist, anti-Semite, homophobic, xenophobic Pat Buchanan again. Speaking of Pat, MSNBC's Alex Witt tweeted, okay, everyone, I realize Pat can inspire passionate opinions, but he has witnessed firsthand much notable history, so I can learn from that. I beg to differ. I have an aversion to learning from racists, especially those who have overstayed their welcome on the TV machine. No, Alex, the only thing that pundidiot inspires, in my humble opinion, is revulsion. CBS's Mark Noller said, calling Prime Minister Brown and not asking him about his political problems is like calling the Octomom and not asking, how are the babies? Pour Me Coffee tweeted her very own Liz Cheney haiku. From his icy loins, daughter boarded and released, straight to cable news. Shock paraphrased Anna Marie Cox, who was on The Rachel Maddow Show. Way to go, Newt Gingrich. If you keep saying things that poll 9%, I'll even follow you on Twitter. And finally, Wolfram said, who will be the first to connect Obama with Carradine's death? Well, Wolfram, it's a toss-up between Newt and Morning Joe. But what do I know?
Congress will be engaged in the difficult issue of how best to reform health care in America. I'm committed to building a transparent process where all views are welcome, but I'm also committed to ensuring that whatever plan we design upholds three basic principles. First, the rising costs of healthcare must be brought down. Second, Americans must have the freedom to keep whatever doctor and healthcare plan they have. or to choose a new doctor or health care plan if they want it. And third, all Americans must have quality, affordable health care.
888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. That was President Barack Obama speaking about health care last month. With us on the phone, following up on the last caller, is Clark Newhall. Clark Newhall does not play a doctor on TV, but he is one in real life.
Hey.
He's a physician, attorney, and activist, and he's with us today to continue the discussion on single-payer health care. Clark, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So I don't know if we were listening in earlier when Mike was just on here. We were discussing the single-payer health care, and I understand, according to Mike, that you are much more versed in the technical nitty-gritties of it. So what can you tell us about this proposal?
Well, Mike's very kind. I did hear the last part of what he has to say, and as always, I'm impressed with his eloquence and his common sense. Mike and I, and he made it easy for me, produced a series of five TV ads, which we have been showing on national networks via the poor man's method of showing TV ads, which is Google TV. And I have to say, if anybody wants to show a TV ad, that's the way to do it. Via the poor man's method of showing TV ads, we have reached 14 million people with Mike's message supporting single payer over the last just about a month now, a little bit more than a month. We're starting a new series of ads tomorrow. Actually, tonight, I think, is when they start running. One of them, the principal one that's showing, is our doctor rapper, a rapper named Dr. JLC, who actually is a doctor in Atlanta. And she has created a rap video that advertises the rally for real health care reform that we are going to ask people to come to in Washington, D.C. on June 25th. Now, I know that's only 2 weeks away, and I know that's kind of short notice for everybody, and I have to tell you, we're doing this on a shoestring, which is basically the string out of my shoes, but we hope to get 10 million people seeing this ad, and maybe 0.1% of them actually coming to Washington. And if we got 0.1% of the people coming to Washington who saw this ad, we would get, it looks to me like we'd get 100,000 people there. Is that right? No, let me see. Maybe that's 10,000. Well, I can't do my math right now. But it'd be a lot of people.
You're a physician and attorney, not a mathematician. No
and
problem.
Could you tell us again what people need to do to see the ad?
Yeah. Actually, there are two things they can do. They can just go to our website. There are two names for it, but I'll give you the longer name first. It's health-justice.org. That's the name that Mike gave you earlier, health-justice.org. And the other website is onepayer.net. That's one, like the number one, PAYER.net. Either one of those will get you to the website, and the wrap with Dr. JLC is right there on the front page, along with the information that tells you what to do to get to Washington on June 25th, which is a Thursday. But the more people turn out on a Thursday, the more impressive it is, I think.
I had a question I was hoping you can help me out with. What I hear a lot of people mentioning when they're talking about the healthcare issue is the increase in costs. It seems to be the one thing everybody agrees on, that the costs have gotten out of control. And I wanted to ask you, what is behind this such an enormous increase in costs? Is it profit taking? Is it the aging population? Is it a combination of things? What is causing healthcare to become so much more expensive?
Boy, if you had the answer to that, you would probably be heading up health reform right now. I don't know that anybody knows, but I think that the people who have studied it most say that there are a number of things. One of them, and the most important, and the largest percentage of it, is the complicated nature of what it takes for a person to get health care in this country. How complicated it is is exemplified by the percentage that doctors spend of their income on billing. The AMA just came out with a study not more than about a month ago, I think, that indicates doctors spend about a quarter of their income on billing. And we know from studies that have been done many times that about 16% of the money that an insurance company takes in premiums is spent in marketing, administration, CEO salaries and bonuses that, for instance, this year run up to $24 million. I think that's enough to buy your own health insurance even. And things that have to do not with health care, but with the financing of health care. We single-payer advocates, we who think that there ought to be a better way, believe that if we replace this extremely complicated system with a much simpler system, we would spend a whole lot less money. And in fact, in Taiwan, where the system is basically, you go to the doctor takes your name down, puts down the date on a piece of paper and sends it into the government pays him, that's the system. The administrative cost, the cost that a doctor spends and that the whole system spends on getting medical care delivered, not the medical care, but just getting it delivered, the whole system spends only about 1%. Now, if we were to spend 1% of our total national health budget on that kind of process, rather than the 31% that we now spend on it, we would have way more than enough money to pay for gold-plated health care for everybody in the country, including all the uninsured. In fact, even if we just eliminated the complications of having 1,200 different insurance companies, that costs us something like $400 billion a year just to have those insurance companies in the mix. If we eliminated that $400 billion a year, that would take care of it. We would not have to raise one more single bleeding dime to do what's necessary. That is, give everybody decent, adequate, basic health care, all the way from soup to nuts, all the way from basic physical examination through rehabilitation and old age care. We can do it. We do not need to raise more money. We do not need to tax people more and more. We can do it with what we have. Sorry, go ahead.
That's more than okay. We have to go to break here, keep our own lights on. But Clark Newhall, physician and attorney and activist with healthjustice.org, thank you very much for your appearance on the show today. Both you and Mike were great. I know this is going to be a conversation we're going to have over the next couple of days, weeks, and months, I'm sure, as the legislation works its way through Congress. 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. Coming up after the break, is President Obama getting a free pass from the media?
At Dodge, Chrysler, and Jeep, we're building a new car company. Right now, we're restructuring to be stronger, leaner, and more competitive. Our new alliance with Fiat gives us access to even more high-quality, environmentally friendly, fuel-efficient vehicles. It's all part of our continuing mission to build the cars and trucks you want to drive. Plus, we have the best lifetime powertrain warranty in the industry, backed by the U.S. government. At Dodge, Chrysler, and Jeep, the future is not only bright, it's electric. Come see what we're building for you.
I'm New Jersey Governor John Corzine, and I should be dead. I was critically injured in a car accident where I lost over half my blood and broke 15 bones in 18 places. I spent 8 days in intensive care where a ventilator was breathing for me. It took a remarkable team of doctors and a series of miracles to save my life when all I needed was a seatbelt. I have to live with my mistake. You don't. Buckle up.
General Aviation serves 5,000 small to mid-sized airports, providing an economic lifeline for communities across America. Millions of jobs and large and small businesses depend on general aviation. A Washington, D.C. plan for costly new fees could shut down community airports and impact over a million jobs. Your help is needed. Get involved. General Aviation serves America. Let's keep it that way.
Does the mainstream media have a crush on Barack Obama? This is the non-stop vitriol we are hearing from the right. And I am curious, is the media in love with Barack Obama, besides Chris Matthews, who apparently gets the tingle up his leg? But other than that, is the media in love with Barack Obama, or is it possible that Barack Obama is just not as much of a screw-up? 888-228-4494 at Jim Alger on the Twitter. Mike, what do you think about this?
Oh, that's not vitriol at all. That's actually, there's a bit of truth to this. The media is kind of, he is the media. He is the media's darling. I mean, I heard somebody joke recently about, you know, when was the last time we had a Newsweek without his picture on the cover? And I don't think it's all bad. I think it will become bad if we come to a point where we don't like what he's doing and we're afraid to criticize it. But I think a lot of people have great hope in his ability to, you know, to do the right thing, for lack of a better term, to be a new voice. And they don't want to criticize or downplay that. I think what we run a risk is if we get to the point where we're afraid to criticize him at all.
It's not that we're not afraid to criticize him. It's that we have suffered through 8 years of George W. Bush, who apparently can't speak, and, you know, we're like, the media is just glad that he's refreshing breath of fresh air.
Well, I would say the media is going a bit further than that.
By what?
If I can, well, good, let me do this in a humorous way by mentioning something Bill Maher said. Bill Maher was trying to do some jokes about the president, just like he has done jokes about all the previous presidents. And he finds that he often gets booed by his audience for just making a joke about Obama, kind of like Obama's off limits. He does no wrong. And so Bill made the joke that he used to go after religion very hard, you know, guns a-blazing after religion, and nobody in the audience batted an eye. And now they're booing when he makes jokes about Obama. So he came to the conclusion that Obama's the new God.
Well, I don't know if that's a fair statement. I mean, even though it's a joke, I just don't see it. I see, you know, coverage because we're in desperate times right now. The economy has tanked. You know, several countries have nuclear arms. We have shootings. What was it? 2-3 in the past 2 weeks, and we're in a series of crises. So the fact that the guy gets up every morning knowing that there's this, you know, enormous pressure, and he still comes out, and he's, you know, almost like us as far as, you know, he's going to Broadway shows, his family's touring Paris, whatever. He's a regular person and not this untouchable. Yeah, you know, you do get a lot of coverage for that, but I think it's deservingly so.
Well, you have to be careful when you go, there's all of this going on and we're in bad times, so don't criticize the president. That's something similar to what was being said after 9/11, where don't criticize Bush right now. That would be unpatriotic.
I don't know that it's don't criticize him so much as Americans are saying, we aren't, you know, we don't buy the criticism. We're, you know, he's doing what we think is generally in our best interest. Even if you don't agree with him 100% of the way, you think, you know, okay, maybe he went a little off course as far as what, you know, individuals would have him do. He generally is progressing our nation forward. So it's not that you can't criticize him. It's just that people don't agree with that right now. So it's almost like refuting Fox News. Because if you listen to them, everything is, you know, Obama's fault.
And I don't disagree with you on that. I think that he does represent a hope people do feel like, in general, he's going in the right direction and doing the right thing, so that they're kind of hesitant to criticize him for that. But then again, if he does do something that we don't agree with, and there has been some criticism from the left on what Obama has been doing so far, or lack of doing. He's continuing to keep us involved in wars overseas. They don't like that. I have to say that I agree with them on that. We were just talking about single-payer health care. Apparently, he supported it very strongly earlier. Now he's kind of going for more of a hybrid where he's including industry into the fold as it exists today. So, you know, we don't want to reach the point where we're, you know, just because we feel he's doing what's in our best interest, because we, and just because we like the guy, that we are booed at for criticizing.
No, I don't think it's that at all. I mean, you know, and I'm with you as far as there is criticism from the left. There's don't ask, don't tell that he has, you know, yet to do anything decisively about. In fact, today apparently he did something that I just kind of scanned it and went, yeah, I don't want to read bad news right this second. But there's that, and there's, you know, the fact that he has refused to release the pictures from Gitmo. There's not on the left some kind of organized effort to not criticize him. It's just that we recognize the importance or the significance of everything else that he's doing right, and the fact that he is doing it under enormous pressure, and these are times that have never been seen before. I mean, you know, when have you ever had a president who comes into office and the next, you know, day, or relatively speaking, the car industry tanks and the banking industry tanks? You know,
before we've had presidents during wartime, we've had presidents, you know, during bad economic times. I understand.
These are worse than bad.
Not the worst we've ever seen. That is not true.
No. I'm saying these are worse than bad times.
The worst our grandparents ever seen. I don't think you can say you've seen times worse than...
No.
Worse than today, yes, a few months ago. I think it's a big argument that we are clearly on a rebound here, but...
I don't know. When you start saying that because of all of this pressure and the circumstance, and we don't... I hear similar arguments when cops step over the line and beat somebody. Well, you don't understand the stress he was under in the moment in time, and the, you know, we want to be fair in our critique.
I think context.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Context is everything, but at the same point, you have to understand what our most recent comparison was. A complete screw up from top to bottom. There's not a fair-minded individual out there who can say that Mr. Bush was anything other than a complete screw-up from top to bottom. And
well, as much as we like to say that, and as much as he had terrible, terrible screw-ups, and at times embarrassed us just beyond belief, a lot of Bush policies are still continuing to this day. For example, the military action in Pakistan and Afghanistan is continuing to this day.
That's because no one disagreed with Afghanistan in the first place. They did attack us. That's where the attacks came from.
Yeah, exactly. Pakistan is
getting out of it.
And Afghanistan is where we should have had our efforts to begin with.
The we can discuss the Afghanistan debate. That's a whole other segment and a whole other show.
Well, I believe we were talking about, is the media too kind to Barack Obama? Is he a media darling? And I think to some extent, just the fact that he comes off as, you know, a great guy makes the media, you know, want to have a positive impression. It's hard to not get a positive impression of Barack Obama.
Well,
but why not? I mean, honestly, the guy is done right. He, you know, came from the family that he did. He went through, you know, Harvard, and
I think it really has more to do with the symbolism of hope that he brings to the world.
Do you notice?
Exactly.
We're arguing why. We're not arguing if he is or if he is not. I would say that he does have favorable media attention.
Well, you get...
It's not a bad thing.
You don't do something wrong. If you don't...
Right.
No wrong?
I didn't say he does no wrong, but he does get hit when he does something goofy. He's getting hit from on the whole don't ask, don't tell thing. He's getting hit for his positions on gay marriage. It's not like he doesn't get hit. people do hit him for certain things. However, there is this bunker mentality of we are all in this together. We've got to pull ourselves out of this together. And maybe he doesn't do every single thing right. But I will take the guy that's right 80% of the time over the guy that's wrong 80% of the time any day of the week. And
right.
You had the last election where you had one candidate who was crystal clearly trying to put forward George Bush's policies, almost Xerox copied them and moved forward with them and defending everything but the most extreme of the policies versus Barack Obama, who is, you know, and you don't have to be the head of the Harvard Law Review to look at the last 8 years and go, this is screwy. But our last presidential candidate, his competition, couldn't see that, could not say something's funky in Denmark. They couldn't get them. They couldn't bring themselves to be there. So when you see this and you say, well, what is our alternative? Are we really going to be? And there are some people out there on the left who will. But are we really going to be a single issue country that one issue makes me throw the guy overboard? And if he's not with me on this one thing, I'm not going to support him on everything else. Forget my kids. Forget education. Forget health care. It's this one issue that I care about, and that's it. Are we really going to do that? And I would argue that that's what's wrong with the right now.
Exactly.
Single issue, and that's why they're tearing to tethers. Although, I will add this cautionary note.
How did
you
go from single issues on the left to single issues on the right? We'll clarify that for me.
Well, because the single being a single issue on the right, being all about abortion or nothing, being all about the Bible or nothing.
You're either with us or you're against us. Sorry, I had to play him.
Far
it's
left.
It's like you support abortion or you're not qualified to be a Supreme Court
the
justice.
Far,
you support this.
The
or you're
far
not qualified.
Left does, but the Democratic Party is not in tatters right now. And that's because most of the people are not single issue. They are of a mind large enough to say, you know what, I can't afford to care about just my driveway. I have to be able to care about my neighbor's block. And we are getting more and more like that, and that's what's going to get us out of this economic mess. So you have to ask yourself, what is to be gained? When you see these guys, at one point the right says, well, the media is not attacking Barack Obama. At the other point, well, they're not either. The right's not attacking Barack Obama in any meaningful sense.
Yeah.
Stupid things like tweeting him.
I started
and
off the segment by saying that the media is not attacking him. I'm saying, does he have a favorable media impression? Is he kind of for?
Well,
is he the media darling?
And my question
and
is,
he does get an overwhelmingly favorable, and he also gets more media than I.
You know what? This is actually just a manufactured right argument recycled, because we saw, you know, last year before the elections that Obama, they tried to make Obama into this Hollywood type person.
You know,
they made a whole lot about that, and now it's just
the Pope. I never hear bad things about the Pope. There must be some left-wing conspiracy there.
Exactly.
If they don't do screwy things, they're not going to report screwy things.
Well, again, this
absolutely.
Is the whole idea. This is not something. This there is a level of truth to the fact, and maybe
would you like the media to invent
because
problems?
He's African-American president, maybe it's because of his personality, maybe it's because of his oratory, or a combination of everything. He does have a somewhat of a celebrity status that we have not seen running for president, since Kennedy. So it's something that we have to acknowledge. This is not
because he can speak in complete sentences.
Well,
and we had 8 years of
it's because the argument here is decent. But we unfortunately have to go to break, and as I keep saying, pay our bills. So we'll be back on the flip side of the break.
Have you added up all the hidden costs behind Walmart's prices? The estimated $1.8 billion taxpayers shell out for health care because Walmart doesn't cover their employees. The lost wages of 1.6 million women who had to take Walmart to court to get paid the same as men. The countless manufacturing jobs lost while America's largest corporation became America's biggest importer of Chinese goods. Behind Walmart's profits, the middle class pays the price. America can't afford it any longer.
Tick, tick, tick. Tick, 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 tick
Severe drought.
Tick, tick, tick.
Devastating, devastating hurricane.
Tick, tick, tick,
tick, tick.
Our future.
Tick,
tick,
tick, tick.
To you.
Tick.
Go to fightglobalwarming.com while there's still time.
Fight global warming before it's too late.
I hope to work just one job for a change.
I hope to have some health care for a change.
I hope to be able to save a little for a change.
We voted on Election Day for hope and change. Now it's time for action. The Employee Free Choice Act lets workers choose to join a union to earn better pay, health benefits, and job security. The Employee Free Choice Act. It's time the economy worked for everyone again.
I have my allergies kicked up today dusting that CD off. That was back from the 80s, the Crush on You. Does the media have a crush on Barack Obama? We were in the middle of a getting into a good debate there on this with my right-wing Attila the Hun friend over here. It's I got Attila the Hun on one side, and we have my communist friend on the other, and I tried my best, ladies and gentlemen, to keep these two apart. I'm lying about. So you're dead wrong about everything. I will defend your right to be wrong. But my larger point that I was making before I was so rudely interrupted by Walmart was to that if you're not doing enormously bad things time after time after time, then you're not going to get bad press. So is the alternative to simply not report what the president's doing or simply bash him for what he's doing, even though your bashing doesn't have any factual basis? Because this is the bigger point. The GOP, they are capable of putting out press releases. They are capable of getting the microphone. They do it every day. But when they do, they sound like a bunch of trained monkeys. All they do is spout out the same nonsense over and over and over again. It's just, the president's bad, his ideas suck, everything's a failure, nothing's going to work. Okay, we get it. What's your plan? Oh, you don't have one. Then put your hand down, sit down, and shut up. That's basically where we're at. If the GOP has some opposing plan or some other ideas that they think are better than what the president's putting forward, and plans that are not time-tested failures, I might add, then, you know, I'm sorry, President Obama, he's all ears.
I think it speaks. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
I was going back to Barack's joke about his ear size.
Yes.
Colbert the other night, which is, by the way, absolutely hilarious. But another thing I would say this president's making himself more accessible to the media. The last president went out of his way not to hold news conferences, went out of his way not to get on the media. Could you imagine the last president on the Colbert show? It wouldn't happen. Could you imagine the last president sitting down with Keith Olbermann? No. That guy was too chicken to go outside of Fox News.
I don't think Karl Rove would have allowed him entrance. He would have said, wait a minute, I can't control the puppet strings.
When you are comparing these two, it's kind of apples and oranges because of the sheer availability issues.
Absolutely. And I think that it's this argument that, you know, Obama is the, you know, untouchable media darling is ridiculous because what do you have to compare it to? George Bush's years in office where it was so easy to have the cheap shots And most of the criticism was rightfully earned. Okay, so now we have, you know, Obama, and is there absence of criticism? No.
It was rightfully earned. I remember from the very beginning, a particular image came to mind. When Bush first won the election, and the left ran around with pictures mocked up of Time magazine with Bush's picture on the front that says, "We're effed." And, of course, I can't say that real word on the radio. Now, at that point,
not
they
this
were
week.
Just,
last week, you
they were just bashing. There was absolutely nothing he had done yet because he hadn't taken office yet. So, you know, you can go off on a tangent to bash the GOP. The GOP does seem to be lost right now, but we've seen periods of time, for example, under Reagan, where the Democrats just seemed to be lost and couldn't win an election to save their life. Now the Democrats are on top. The Republicans are kind of lost. We're hearing a lot of noise coming out from them. But You distract from the question, which was, does Barack get a lot of favorable media attention?
No, that wasn't the question.
With the argument that you know, oh, we're effed with that magazine cover, were they wrong? I mean, this is a question about, you know, fair criticism, and that definitely is a point. Was that a fair and accurate?
No, I don't know that would be fair criticism. You really can't say that, because to say that we're screwed before the guy even gets into office is not really fair. It's about as unfair as the people who are
now. He was in office, though.
No, he wasn't. Right? What Mike was talking about was before he even got in.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And if it was when he got in, it was within a few weeks of it. It wasn't anything close to. However, it's the same thing now. You know, the right was complaining about that then, and now they have no problem bashing Barack now.
Not only do they bash him, they call him a czar. They call his policy socialism.
What I would say is this. You did see members of the left, the far left, who were boisterous in their support for Al Gore, run around and scream and yell, and they of course were obviously upset with the election. What you did not see was Al Gore get on TV and undercut this president. What you did not see was members of the administration saying he might be a secret Muslim. What you did not see was the former vice president of the United States criticize him.
And
you did not.
Now you've gone into an argument about the behavior of the Democratic Party versus the behavior of the Republican Party. All I was speaking to was the fact that the media is
drew a correlation between the far left and what's going on with Barack now. And what I'm saying to you is what you saw with members of the far left. You're not seeing members of the far right screaming for Barack's head right now. Well, you are, but you are also getting it from respected as much as they could be in their own little teeny tiny circles, members of the former administration going after Barack. And the Republicans seem to be frustrated that they don't have a message and the media won't manufacture one for them. If you have a message, a coordinated message to get out that you are better than, or you have better ideas than the other person's ideas, then you will be able to put those out there and people will pick up on it. But we're not seeing that.
Right. Dick Cheney even has his daughter out there, you know, as his little pet pipple. And Gore has a couple kids. Clinton, his daughter, never said anything to criticize Bush.
And by the way, knowing about all this criticism, which means all the Barack reporting can't be all that great because we know about all this stuff. It's just, I think what we're seeing is the right wing is ticked off that none of this stuff is actually digging in and taking root.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because they've had 8 years of controlling the media via their talking points, via, you know, Karl Rove and Dick Cheney personally going down and visiting Rush Limbaugh. And so now they're trying to control him.
Sorry?
If we've had 8 years of control of the media and nothing bad being said about the Republicans, then where had we gotten all of these bad things about Bush? We got it from the same media as well.
It's actually just starting to come out.
Oh,
so,
please.
No, the
Bush bashing has been going on a long time. I'll give it some of it deserved.
Whoa, what part of the Bush bashing was not deserved?
What part of the Bush bashing was not deserved?
Yes.
You're going to try to nail me on
Oh, I'm not going to try, sir. I will.
He is.
What part of the Bush bashing was not deserved?
I am not going to be able to produce a list of things that are said, but just the way that you two immediately take an issue and go off to criticizing the GOP and blaming.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me just.
Bush is example in and of itself.
But to back up for a second, right? Listen. Rush Limbaugh has this microphone, and the polls out recently.
Darling. Bush bashing.
I don't care about Rush Limbaugh.
No, wait.
The point that I'm getting at is if it was just Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Alan Colmes, Keith Olbermann, Rachel Maddow, then you could say, okay, well, you know, it's just the media, they're doing the left and the right, they're doing their thing. It's not. On the people who are attacking Barack, it is former vice presidents of the United States. It is former members of the cabinet. I mean, we are talking about, you know, political operatives, West Wing staffers. We're talking about high-level people who are trying to, I actually say they're legacy shopping, but they are trying to tear down this president with no other plan in place. This is the equivalent of getting ready to storm a hill, and they go, wait, I don't like the way you're going to storm that hill, so everyone just sit down right now. You just sit right down there in the open. Yeah, you guys go ahead and sit down, and we're gonna think about it for a while. But General, the other side is advancing. Oh no, that's okay. Your plan sucks. We're gonna just think about this for a while. What's gonna happen? You're gonna get killed. It's the same exact thing. There's no other plan coming up, and the GOP seems hell bent and ticked off. They cannot get any foothold. They can't get a foothold because they don't have any ideas, not because people aren't reporting them.
And the Democrats are happy to blame every piece of this current situation on George Bush. He did get us into the Iraq War, but the entire state of our economy is not his fault. The entire economic downturn we had is very multifaceted. It is not simply a result of George
what
Bush.
What part is not his fault?
People running up the housing is not his fault.
People running up the housing is not his fault. Well, okay, yeah, I'm going to
actually go to irresponsible spending is not his fault.
I'll go. Buying
a house and expecting it to appreciate hundreds of thousands of dollars is not his fault. I mean, I'm not saying that we've just come off of a great
No, but he did destabilize the regulation that would have stopped that from happening.
Yes, but that was only one part of that is oversimplification. That is one part of a multifaceted thing that a problem.
Don't use long words with me, sir.
Why not?
It's not oversimplification.
Oh, it is way over. To say this one regulation caused this entire fiasco is tremendous oversimplification.
If I announce tomorrow that we're going to stop enforcing speeding tickets on the freeway and then everyone starts speeding,
this
you can
is not
say,
akin
hey,
to
one's
speeding
from the
tickets.
Other. But when they removed the regulations and they allowed the banks to play these funky games.
They didn't remove all of the regulations.
They removed all of them.
There were certain regulations that were removed that had a contributory effect, but that was not
that allowed people to go out and get interest-only loans.
No, there was fraud involved in that as well.
You're right, but they also removed... There was no oversight. Once again, a lot of this comes down to...
There wasn't no oversight.
Where was the SEC in this, Mike?
Altalunt. Hanging out.
Yeah.
That oversight was supposed to be there, but
it was supposed to be there, and there was no accountability for them when it wasn't there. So Obama inherits this mess.
And who was in charge?
So he told the SEC, ignore all this that's going on.
Hey, you know what? I have no doubt. I have no doubt.
Everything.
I have no
doubt.
Go
ahead.
I have no
doubt that George Bush has nothing to do with party politics.
I have no doubt that George Bush did not know what was going on. If this makes you feel better, I have no doubt whatsoever that Bush was absolutely clueless as
Halliburton.
Government. I have no doubt whatsoever. But that does not.
I go back to something that you had said yourself earlier about, you know, we all had to part in going to Iraq because a large percentage of the American population supported it at the time. We don't like to admit that, but we did. When this economy was booming, when housing was going out of control, when we knew we were going too far, too many people were benefiting from it. Not enough people spoke up. It was not just the administration.
Oh, we spoke up all right. We were just ignored.
Well,
we spoke up after the fact.
We are going to put this conversation to bed, and we're going to have a nice heated discussion in our next segment, ladies and gentlemen, so make sure you stay with us. 888-228-4494. We're going to talk about something up next that got this this crew here all heated and worked up to the point of almost blows last time. We're gonna discuss marijuana and whether or not cities are breaking federal laws by licensing pot dispensaries. This is a very interesting thing, and someone just went to jail over it. But first, we're gonna take a break and go listen to Gotta Laugh's Tweet Spot.
Welcome to my tweet.
it's me, gotta laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. Let me begin on a serious note, the Holocaust Museum shooting. Chalk said, "We must stop these white supremacist terrorists on our National Mall, or soon they'll be following us home." That's it for that subject today, but I'll follow up next week with more, I'm sure. On to random tweetage, because, you know, some days are more random-y tweety than others. Dave Weigel said, "Ensign said, GOP needs new faces to attract minorities." Michael Steele throws his radio at the wall. Yep, and then Michelle Bachmann screams, "You the man!" Stranahan tweeted, "Broken news." Tragic. Officials confirmed that debris found all over the United States are the remains of the Republican Party. Shock tweets, "Freeman Dyson, who is not a climatologist, doubts climate change." Big news for Sean Hannity, who is not a journalist. JFK fan said, "Sometimes I think if Jesus came down and said Obama was doing a good job, the wingnuts would ask for a second opinion." In response to Joe Lieberman and Lindsey Graham's threats to shut down the government until Congress passes its legislation to prohibit the release of torture photos, Cogro X said, "House war opponent should send Lieberman and Graham FTD thank you for filibustering bouquets." Cogro X also had this one, "I just said secret Muslim and got offered a TV show and 3 book deals." Hannity hater said, "Of course Newt's not a citizen of the world. He's a narrow-minded, xenophobic, bigoted racist. Perfect leader for GOP of tomorrow." Spoofy tweeter Palin Bachman said, "I guess being a small-town mayor is sort of like Speaker of the House, except that you have actual responsibilities." And finally, our BFF Meghan McCain. "Hey, a-hole with a camera phone, what are you going to do with that pic? Put it on your Facebook page titled, 'McCain Chick Buying Grapes'?" Face it, Meg Mac, you're a celebrity now, albeit one who keeps getting speeding tickets. Trust me, they'll keep snapping pictures, but what do I know?
She is great. 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494 is the number here at Common Sense Radio. We are going to have hopefully a civil discussion regarding an interesting facet to the quote-unquote legal marijuana debate going on in the United States. There are cities in this country, the city of Los Angeles is one of them, that have licensed dispensaries for medical marijuana. And it hasn't gone over so well with the federal government, despite Attorney General Holder's proclamation that they were not going to enforce. Not actively enforcing a law is considerably different than changing it. And it can still be enforced, as one gentleman found out a few days ago in Los Angeles, was sentenced to some pretty decent jail time. I believe it was a year and a day. He could have gotten 5 years. The judge did show leniency in the case. However, it is shedding light on this whole debate as to whether or not state laws and local ordinances trumpet a federal law. And if they do not, then my question would be, what in the hell are city and state governments doing, even thinking that they can tell someone it's okay to break the federal law and get away with it? And if we start ignoring these federal laws, then what's next?
I really don't understand it myself. My understanding has always been that when you have an issue that's covered both by local / state and federal law, usually the stricter of the two is enforced. So, for example, if you're talking about housing, the federal government provides for a certain amount of protection against discrimination and whatnot for housing. California provides more. So generally the California law is followed. It encompasses the federal law and it goes further. But when the federal law goes further than the state law, it's supposed to be the federal law. Now, I don't understand how they are licensing pot dispensaries if they're doing it sort of like drugs are legal to sell on the street, but they're certain things are legal to sell in a pharmacy and they're making it like a quasi-pharmacy. I don't know what loopholes they're using, and I don't know what the communication process between the state and the federal government is on this, but it seems very bizarre that if this is federally illegal to do, that somebody would be issuing a license to do it.
Well, and this is going to heat up the debate again, because the idea that a state government or a local municipality, who, let's be honest, they're trying to get the tax revenue. They want to sell their licenses and get the tax revenue. The idea that they would go out and essentially condone the violation of federal law. Now, here's the kicker. Taking Attorney General Holder's statements that they are not going to actively enforce this provision, there's a difference, folks. If you are a federal law enforcement officer and you are walking down the street and you see a what's obviously a medical marijuana dispensary, you can assume that there's a crime being committed, but you don't have to say there is, and you don't have to, you're under no obligation to go and investigate that, and you continue to walk down the street. However, if you are walking down the street, and as you are walking past this medical marijuana dispensary, they're unloading the back of a van with boxes, say pot, and they're throwing them in there, then this gentleman has a duty to react. In fact, failure to do so is a crime. It's called misprision of a felony. Federal agents don't have the option as to whether or not to enforce federal law, regardless of what the Attorney General says.
It's a strange circumstance. This is coming more and more and more out in the open. Where I live recently, they have taken advantage of a loophole where the city actually stopped licensing more facilities, but they put a provision in that that said that if there was hardship, that they could accept more more applications. After this was found out, hundreds and hundreds of more applications came in, and hundreds of more facilities were licensed. Now, some of these facilities will literally put the picture of pot leaf out in front of the dispensary, and they're in little shopping centers and all over the place. So it's becoming quite flagrant, and we really have to get to the point where, as if we want this, we should petition to change the law, rather than trying to circumvent the law.
And change federal law, not state law, because federal law, or lobby it to have this. Well, you have to get a law changed either way, so that the states can control it.
It's very troubling when states think that they can undermine federal law, though. I find it to be very, not the use of the marijuana itself, but I find the fact that states are going against federal law so openly very troubling, and I'm getting the feeling like there's some part of this that we're not getting.
I feel I honestly feel bad for this guy because of the fact that the judge actually even said that he had made an effort to follow California's laws on marijuana dispensaries and that the judge had, you know, he had a hard time sending this guy to prison. And especially in light of the fact that Obama's, the administration promised that they would not really prosecute people if they were complying with state law.
I was arrested for this. Was before that. It was under the Bush administration. So let's put a little of this in context. We do need to get some straight up clarification, though, because first of all, there's no good having laws in the books that aren't enforced. I mean, I've always been for someone who once a year empties out the recycle bin of unusable laws. But beyond that, I think there's a couple of issues here, a couple of dynamics here. We've talked about this before. One of them is the pure disingenuousness of individuals who are saying they need this for medicinal purposes. Now, before I get all the hate mail again, let me clarify what I'm saying here. I think that people should have the right, if they want to get high, to get high. I don't care. But don't sit there and tell me that you got back pains.
Well,
and this is why you need to get high. Don't treat
a,
me like an idiot when you're making the argument. Just tell me the truth and say, hey, I want to get high. Because then you can have an honest discussion.
Right. I think, to be fair, there's a level of dishonesty on both sides. There is the reefer madness side, which is the old government standby that if this pot starts to be used by the general population, it's going to be a calamity, which is not true. And then there's the other side saying that this is all purely medical and there's no other way to do this. And clearly, you don't need hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dispensaries opening up in the Los Angeles area to serve the few people that may actually need it for AIDS and cancer treatment. There are a subsection of the population that's using this just to distribute marijuana in a way that normally wouldn't be illegally, they normally couldn't distribute it. I tripped over myself there because I was about to say they can't legally, but there's a question whether or not this is legal at all in the first place.
Well, New Jersey is actually dealing with the same issue, or a very similar issue. We're in New Jersey, we're trying to pass medical marijuana legislation to allow patients to grow it and sell it, or at least grow it, or I'm sorry, or at least have it. And I believe that the bill that they did pass allows them to order it, which is kind of weird. But, you know, it's when you're dealing, here's the whole thing. I know Jim is having the conversation about marijuana, being able to smoke it by yourself. In New Jersey, the legislation that we're dealing with is, you know, only pertains to medical use. But at some point, I'm kind of on Jim's side that let's just agree that this is not the worst thing in the world.
You know, I really think it's time to consider it like the holding back on this is getting more and more similar to the prohibition of alcohol, where, you know, people want it, they want to do it. It's not more risky than smoking cigarettes, that we can tell. So, you know, if the population wants something, you're trying to have a free society, you know, let them have it. I don't agree that there's no risks, but it seems that we're getting to the point where we're just going to keep the law, we're going to flagrantly violate it. And that is more troubling to me than let's bring this onto the legal side where we can control it, where we can monitor it, where we can watch it, we can even make some money off of it.
And what's sad about this, the story for out in California, is that, you know, he was selling it for medical purposes, and for the patients who are using that, they are patients who are in absolute crisis. They're going to die, and now...
Most people with these medical marijuana cards are not there for medical reasons, okay? They want to get high. And this is what I'm saying about the disingenuousness, because you don't want to go down this path, because you can get the same active ingredient that's in pot and pill form. In fact, scientists have been able to get the feeling of euphoria out of it, because God knows if you are taking medication for an ailing back of glaucoma,
the pill that
you can't
only
feel good in the process.
That just has the feeling of euphoria and nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, my, you guys.
treatment in pill form. I didn't realize this, but they've had it since 1986 in pill form.
Yes, but let's be honest. People want to get high. And so while I will defend people's right to get high, at the same time, I will say, let's be honest about the debate and say that that's the purpose. But what they do is they try to cloud it in medical, that it's a medical necessity, and therefore that's their way of shutting down the argument. That's their way of saying, you don't get to question me because I really need this, and how dare you get involved in my medical care. But it's not your medical care if you're just, you know, hanging out, and it's not a doctor that prescribed this, and it's not being given to you in a pharmacy. You know, we've got to do something about this. There are legitimate people who apparently are have good effects by this.
It has been successfully used as somewhat of a pain reliever, and more so than that, to increase appetite and to bring over.
It actually cuts out the nausea that's associated with chemotherapy,
right,
for cancer patients. It's one of the only things that has all added benefits for cancer patients.
Well, they found other things too that do the same thing. But like I said,
you can be prescribed this in the traditional sense.
The purpose of this segment is to discuss whether or not this is something that, you know, if it's against federal law to do it, then where does the local local governments get off telling people that we're going to go ahead and license this activity? At a bare minimum, this guy should get his licensing fees back. But it seems to me...
How can it be that we've sent somebody to do something that they then get arrested for? This is insane.
This is
the local
is
government out of control.
I kind of see where the judge is coming from. It is the local government out of control. It's the local government doing whatever the hell they damn well feel like it, and not doing anything. 888-228-4494. 888-228-4494, and we'll catch you on the backside of the break.
For nearly three decades, Dr. David Nichols has flown to a remote island in Chesapeake Bay to stitch wounds and treat bad hearts. Without Doc Nichols and Tangier Airport, hardworking fishermen and their families would have no health care. Now a costly federal budget plan with crippling new fees could shut down thousands of community airports like Tangier, threatening millions of jobs and life-saving medical care. Get involved. Let's protect community airports and jobs. General Aviation serves America. Let's keep it that way.
At Dodge, Chrysler, and Jeep, we're building a new car company. Right now, we're restructuring to be stronger, leaner, and more competitive. Our new alliance with Fiat gives us access to even more high-quality, environmentally friendly, fuel-efficient vehicles. It's all part of our continuing mission to build the cars and trucks you want to drive. Plus, we have the best lifetime powertrain warranty in the industry, backed by the U.S. government. At Dodge, Chrysler, and Jeep, the future is not only bright, it's electric. Come see what we're building for you.
I'm New Jersey Governor John Corzine, and I should be dead. I was critically injured in a car accident where I lost over half my blood and broke 15 bones in 18 places. I spent 8 days in intensive care where a ventilator was breathing for me. It took a remarkable team of doctors and a series of miracles to save my life when all I needed was a seatbelt. I have to live with my mistake. You don't. Buckle up.
Is the phone number here at Common Sense. We are discussing pot, marijuana, reefer, all that fun stuff. Token up, dude.
You really seem to know all of the,
I got
the idiots. Names for
it. Don't even try that. Yeah. Whether or not the local city governments can or is it fair for them to be licensing pot dispensaries when it's against federal law to do so, to dispense pot. It seems completely counterintuitive and certainly setting some people up for a fall.
Yeah, it's dangerous. It's dangerous when your local government tells you that, this is legal now because we voted on it and we've decided that it's legal and here's your license to do it. When the whole thing started out and is still against federal law, we have tremendous variations in local enforcement. I'll give you yet another example. If you are, say, pulled over for a traffic stop in the state of California and you're found to have marijuana on you and it's not deemed to be large enough to sell, I don't know where the cutoff is, but let's just say for the sake of argument you have a joint or two in your car. That's confiscated and you're literally written a ticket. You go over to our neighboring state, Nevada, and you get pulled over in the exact same circumstances. Your car gets towed. You get arrested. You go to jail. So, I mean, now states can choose to,
gun laws vary state
right.
to state.
They can choose to enforce things
to Texas
to
put your firearm on the dashboard. Do that
but,
in California.
Yeah, then, well, like we said earlier, if you have a state law that takes it further down, that becomes more strict,
I was a member of the Los Angeles neighborhood council system for a while, and I remember specifically when we were creating the bylaws for the neighborhood council that we had formed, one of the things that was in bylaws, it's in every set of bylaws across the city of Los Angeles, so I got to believe that other jurisdictions have this, is that you will follow the in order, which I remember this whole thing. You follow the United States Constitution.
The whole list.
When not inconsistent, the state constitution. When not inconsistent, state law. When not inconsistent, city law. When not inconsistent, neighborhood council bylaws. When not inconsistent, Robert's Rules of Order. In that order. The key term is when not inconsistent.
Now, can you imagine how this could spiral out of control if you have localities deciding that they're going to enforce or not enforce or make law in contradiction to that above them? It puts you in an impossible situation.
It does seem, I don't know, it seems pretty weird, if you ask me.
And I think this argument is also totally separate from the argument over whether or not, the marijuana should be legal, whether or not marijuana is being used properly or not. We're talking here about the local government deciding that it's going to do what it wants in the face of federal law. And I think if you really believe this, you should be petitioning to change the federal law.
Well, one could argue that this whole thing actually hurts the medical marijuana people even more because it's giving them a false sense that they've already accomplished their goal, which is to legalize something when it's not. And then when they least expect it, they're going to get bopped with this, as Mr. Lynch found out.
I mean, that's a crazy thought. We have literally hundreds of these dispensaries in the Los Angeles area operating under this pretense.
This just floors me completely. I just don't understand it because you guys, I mean, I do understand it, but I'm shocked because there's been, you know, this push to really explain the situation.
Yeah, and I think that this is one that is going to go on, this discussion is going to go on for a while. 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. There is something I wanted to bring up before we get on to our wonderful subject. Our segment coming up next is the Jackass of the Week, and that's going to be fun for us. But late entries to the Jackass of the Week. Maybe we'll bring him up next week. You guys been following this whole David Letterman, Sarah Palin spat?
Oh, very lightly. Sounds kind of ridiculous to me.
Well, David Letterman, I don't know.
Was he not making some jokes about her daughter?
Well,
maybe they were a little off color.
Let's take a lesson.
One awkward moment for Sarah Palin at the Yankee game. During the seventh inning, her daughter was knocked up by Alex Rodriguez.
Had a wonderful time. The toughest part of her visit was keeping Elliot Spitzer away from her daughter. That was the hard part. Were the jokes in?
Now, that was interesting, shall we say. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, comedians, of course, are not going to make all jokes in good taste. It was funny. And she, of course, has the right to respond. No, I think that's part of what makes the country great. People can make those types of jokes about those in politics, those in leadership positions, and you know we have to protect their right to do that without, you know, without having to face consequences for doing so. You know, go to North Korea and try to make that kind of statement.
Well, I think that one of the issues that I have is that Todd Palin sent out a thing basically where he said that he wouldn't let David Letterman near his daughter, giving implications. They've been really trying to stoke this whole old man going after teenage girl thing.
Well, they have the right,
right,
to keep that.
That's the way that they're slanting it, and it's, you know, it's the whole notion of let me go feign righteous indignation when, you know, Letterman is a comedian. He's not a politician. He has no responsibility to be politically correct.
Maybe
that's,
I apologize for this.
And he did, exactly.
Hold on. Or I guess the question is, he apologized for this or did
he? Were the jokes in question in questionable taste? Of course they were.
Of course.
Do I regret having told them? Well, I think probably I do. But you know what? There are thousands of jokes I regret telling on this program. With that in mind, Governor Palin, if you're watching, I would like you to consider coming to New York City, you and Todd as my guests, or leave Todd at home.
I just think it's funny that, you know, Sarah Palin is going to play the victim when, if you look back in Letterman's history, he's made O.J. jokes, he's made Michael Jackson jokes. You know, this is not the worst thing in the world. Get over yourself. You're making news out of nothing.
A 14-year-old girl. And
no, he wasn't, though. He wasn't making him out of the 14-year-old girl. 14-year-old. The Palins are painting it as that. He was making fun of Bristol, the 18-year-old, who got, you know, knocked up, as they've said, you know, without being married.
This is where you start to say, well, wait a second. You know, first your instinct is children, not fair game. But then you go, wait a minute. Wait a second. You're the one that made your children fair game. You're the one that brought your children front and center with you every single place you went. You're the
one
that sit there and touted that you know how to raise children and your values were good for kids. And your absence-only program, which is what David Letterman is going after here, is what works for children. You're the one trying to tell me how to raise my kids. So does that suddenly raise, turn the specter into, well, maybe this isn't unfair? I got to tell you, my honest take in this is that I still think, as a rule of thumb, you keep kids the heck out of it. Especially
but Bristol, who the joke was aimed at, has already made herself a public figure. She was on the cover of several, or at least one magazine that I know of. She, as an 18-year-old and an adult that can make her own decisions, has put herself out there on other talk shows as, you know,
well,
the advocate for abstinence while holding her child. And so, you know what? It wasn't necessarily an unfair shot on Letterman's, you know, behalf. He was referring to her. She's an 18-year-old now, not a 14-year-old child, not Sarah's other one. And so it was a joke that in context should be taken as it is.
Well, I also think that it's important to note that when a politician makes their family the center of their campaign, then you should expect that people are going to say something about it. And also, David Letterman didn't just insult them. He also insulted Sarah Palin directly by referring to her slutty flight attendant suit. And other various things. I think that Letterman, you know, he's being funny. He's saying off-color jokes. It's late at night. He's got to step up his game now, because now he's competing with Conan, who I never thought in a million years I'd ever say that. I think that I'm having a hard time with this one, because as a rule of thumb, I think kids are out of bounds.
Yeah, I don't see an issue here.
She's not a kid. She's an adult now. I mean, she's Sarah's kid, but she's an adult that has chosen to put herself out in the public view and as such, out for the consumption and opinions of the public. So don't give me that line.
I think David Letterman has the right to make jokes. He has the right to make off-color jokes. It's not determined to be libel or slander. He has the right to say what he wants, and I think the Palins have the right to respond and to hit back. I really don't see any issue, you know, to debate here at all.
888-228-4494. 888-228-4494. This is Common Sense Radio.
Let's be completely honest. No company wants to go through this. But we're not witnessing the end of the American car. We're witnessing the rebirth of the American car. General Motors needs to start over in order to get stronger. There was a time when 8 different brands made sense. Not anymore. There was a time when our cost structure could compete worldwide. Not anymore. Reinvention is the only way we can fix this. And fix it, we will. So here's what the new GM is going to be. Fewer, stronger brands. Fewer, stronger models. Greater efficiencies. Better fuel economy, and new technologies. Leaner, greener, faster, smarter. This is not about going out of business. This is about getting down to business. Because the only chapter we're focused on is Chapter 1.
I hope to work just one job for a change.
I hope to have some health care for a change.
I hope to be able to save a little for a change.
We voted on Election Day for hope and change. Now it's time for action. The Employee Free Choice Act lets workers choose to join a union to earn better pay, health benefits, and job security. The Employee Free Choice Act. It's time the economy worked for everyone again.
Is our number here at Common Sense Radio. Or you can reach us on the Twitter at Jim Alger. We have a new segment for you this week. This one is our Jackass of the Week. We figured this would be an appropriate segment to have given the plethora of jackasses available to us. And I did ask my trusted compatriots to whittle the ever-so-long list down to a couple. And Mike's the first one up with his Jackass of the Week nominees. Who do you got, Mike?
My nominees for this week's Jackass of the Week. First, I've got Reverend Jeremiah Wright. And let me give you a quote from the Reverend, the good Reverend this week. He said, and I quote, "I'm not talking about all Jews, all people of the Jewish faith. I'm talking about Zionists," he said. "I'm talking about facts, historical facts. I'm not talking about emotionally charged words."
Oh, this is when he said the Jews were trying to stop him from getting to Barack Obama.
Because that's not emotionally charged, but I mean on the Zionists. He is claiming that the Jews are not allowing him access to President Obama. Apparently they have that power.
In his defense, they might have that power. Rahm Emanuel is Jewish. So he might be right.
Hey, I could be on. Maybe I missed the wrong pick for the week here. But he said, "Them Jews ain't going to let him talk to me."
I think it's more that his words are stopping Barack Obama from talking to him.
I think the president can talk to who he wants to. I don't think that the Jews are holding him back from talking to the Reverend, but the Reverend begs to differ there. And I thought that qualified him for Ass of the Week.
Methinks the president of the United States strikes me as a mildly, at least, I'd say moderately intelligent man. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I'd say I'd even one up that. I'd say he's well above average.
Yes.
Well above average.
And if I was running for dog catcher, I wouldn't want to be anywhere near Jeremiah Wright.
Oh, my gosh. He is the gift that keeps on giving. We knew he was a little off his rocker early along, but apparently he keeps making the comments, and he's unsuccessfully backpedaling. So let me move on to my second Jackass of the Week. We have Newt Gingrich.
There's a tried and true favorite.
Who has declared that Obama's policies have already failed. These policies that we are still rolling out, this money that still has yet to be spent, because the jobless numbers went up a little bit higher than the president figured that they would. The policy has already failed. They are not going to be able to bring in enough tax revenue based on the lack of people to tax, apparently, from the increase in the unemployment rate. So the prediction is too rosy, and thus it has already failed, according to Newt.
Of course, what Newt's failing to calculate for is that if the economy improves at a 1% greater scale than its decline, then that evens out.
Well, truth be told, I do think that the projections are a little too rosy, as they always are.
They're saying we're going to pop 10% next year. I'm not sure that's all that rosy.
Always remember back in the days where we actually had a surplus, and they had projected that surplus out for 10 years of increasing, and they wanted to base spending on that. Maybe that's part of the reason we are where we are now. But to say that the entire policy is now a failure, to declare it a failure, how many months has Barack been in office? Four or five months. This jumping to already call him or call his policies a failure, a little bit premature.
Well, I think that the Newt Gingrich calling Barack Obama's policies a failure has a lot more to do with the 2010 elections and his own desire to be president.
He called it that because he wanted to.
Yeah, he's looking for attention.
So that's why he's my second nominee for Jackass of the Week.
Chris, do you have any nominees for our Jackass of the Week this week?
My pick is Rush Limbaugh. Although my pick was Rush Limbaugh, I really had a hard time narrowing it down to what he has said because so much garbage comes out of his mouth. His comments in regards to the shooting at the Holocaust Museum, quote, "The American left is trying to score some political points as a result of this tragedy at the Holocaust Museum in Washington. This guy's hate stems from influence that you find on the left. An incident like this had people on the left applauding inside their hearts."
It's always ridiculous when anyone in politics decides to say that they know what is in someone else's heart, and Rush Limbaugh is clearly just being hateful.
Well, talk about your blaming the other side for everything. This is almost going so far as to say, hey, that earthquake in San Francisco is because a lot of gay people have... It's ridiculous.
People have said that.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm referring to. he's saying that this tragedy occurred. This unhinged individual decides that he's going to go and shoot a security guard. He was trying to shoot up the whole building there. And to say that that's a result of, quote-unquote, the left?
Well, I think you have a harder time trying to say that it's the left that's stirring up trouble and it's stirring up a fever pitch in this country. It's more the right because they're stirring it up against Barack Obama. If the left is stirring up trouble, who are they stirring it up against exactly? The left can't seem to get its pants on straight in the morning sometimes. They don't know what they want to hit first, whether it's trying to get health care through or gay marriage through or any number of things. They have a difficult time getting it together. So this idea that it's the left that's whipping up a fever pitch in this country is beyond ridiculous. I think this is, you know, Rush Limbaugh in his role as de facto leader of the Republican Party.
Well, you know, if you want to go wacky left,
projecting,
compare the wacky left to the wacky right. I mean, the wacky left believes that George Bush was responsible for blowing up the towers on 9/11.
Well, that's insanity.
And I mean, you're going to get insanity.
He's way too stupid to pull that off.
Yes, this is the like as the jokes go, you know, the government that couldn't even do a good job of
they couldn't find a boat in Louisiana, but they're going to pull that off. Come on.
They couldn't even manage to plant some weapons of mass destruction to go, hey, look, we found them.
You know, I don't want to go down that rabbit trail, but isn't that an amazing thing that we didn't at least plant something there? That is the...
Well, can you imagine how embarrassing that would have been?
To get caught?
And get busted. But, I mean, you know, we botched that up horribly. I can't imagine in my wildest dreams them pulling off that stunt with the precision that would have taken. You know, you see the thing physically impact the building, and then supposedly the demolition went off. Well, I've gone too far down this rabbit trail.
Yeah.
But the extremes are no good, and extremists are no good. And trying to blame a political viewpoint for somebody going off and shooting somebody is a bit too far for me.
Yeah, I think Rush Limbaugh likes to say that he knows what's in people's hearts, and a lot of politicians tend to do this, and it's a pretty bad rabbit trail to go down because they really don't have any way of knowing what's in someone's hearts.
And, Jim, you had your picks of the week, of course.
Yes, I did. I have both a runner-up and, of course, our winner, and I'll save the winner for last.
For last?
The first one I had was our old favorite friend, Sean Hannity, who, as usual, decides to deceive everyone who listens to his show.
Waterboarding Sean Hannity?
Yeah, that's the one. The one that's too coward to get a waterboarding after he said that he was going to. And
well, you know it's just a little water on your face.
Oh,
you know?
Of course. Now you're going back to Scarborough.
Hands up in the air and a little, oh, I'm mixing up too.
You're mixing up everybody. You're getting all these right-wing lunatics all mixed up here. Sean Hannity decided to tell his listeners that Barack Obama went to Cairo and gave voice to 9/11 sympathizers. And in order for him to make that even have any level of credibility, he took what Barack Obama said and cut out the second half of it, where Barack Obama acknowledged that some people have a different view as to why 9/11 occurred and what exactly it was around it.
They have a different perspective on it
that we would not agree with and, frankly, find offensive.
Acceptable, yes.
And, however, he very quickly, I mean within a millisecond, said, however, 3,000 innocent men, women, and children died that day, and these are not things to be debated. These are facts. He was very stern and clear about that. So Sean Hannity takes the first half of the sentence and then cuts out the second half and then continues his rhetoric about how Barack Obama hates America.
So basically he plays Barack Obama stating that I understand how some people, I'm not going to quote here, but think that 9/11 was okay. And then before Barack Obama could finish that sentence and say, but it's not.
Yeah, and that's even going further than what Barack had actually said, because Barack did not even, he never once said that he could understand it. He understands that people have a different view. He doesn't understand that view. It's very clear to draw the distinction. I understand that a white supremacist has a different view. I don't understand where his screwed up head is coming from. That is the context here, and of course, you know, as with everything, context is everything. Sean Hannity really came pretty close to getting Jackass of the Week for that one this week. But the winner of the Jackass of the Week award by a nail was United States Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa, the formerly distinguished gentleman. Now I don't know what the heck he thinks he's doing. Prior to leaving for Europe, the president recorded his Saturday morning radio address. In that radio address, it was also broadcast on YouTube, the president made reference that it was time to deliver on healthcare. And he was addressing that to himself, the American people, Congress, Washington as a whole. And Chuck Grassley took offense to this. When this went on the air on Saturday, of course, by that point, the president was already in Europe. Chuck Grassley hears this or sees this come on the air, and he is offended by the fact that President Obama has said it's time to deliver. Those three words just got it.
Took it as if he wasn't delivering personally, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know what his inferiority complex about this was, but he decided to take personal offense to this, at which point he contacted his chief of staff and drew up a stern letter and requested the White House switchboard put him in contact with the – oh, wait. No, I'm sorry. Back up.
Didn't do that?
That's what a United States senator should have done if he had a problem with the president. No, I apologize. What Chuck Grassley did was he decided to go on Twitter and tweet the president of the United States. And not only did he tweet the president of the United States on Twitter, but he tweeted him incorrectly at that, which is the real kicker.
How did he do that?
If you're going to send a tweet to a person on Twitter, you would either go to at Barack Obama or at the White House. Both have Twitter accounts. He doesn't. He just puts it down as blasted out there on his regular account. And this is what he writes. He writes, "President Obama, while you sightseeing in Paris, you said time to deliver on healthcare. When you are a hammer, you think everything is nail. I'm no nail."
Always sounds great when you read these verbatim.
Oh, it gets better.
They're worse than emails.
It gets better. Second one is, "Press Obama, you got nerve while you sightseeing in Paris to tell us time to deliver on healthcare. We still on schedule, even working weekend." First of all, the idea that a United States senator is going to respond to the President of the United States on Twitter is asinine. It's a jackass move. The whole thing is to get some kind of publicity, to get the news stories that he did get off of it, and to send a message to the public. It's akin to me putting out an ad in the newspaper that my sister owes me $50.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. I would just call her. So this whole thing is utterly ridiculous. It's the game playing that we see go on in Washington all the time. I swear these guys don't know how to play nice together. They all act like a bunch of six-year-olds, whether it's Republicans calling the Democratic Party the Democrat Party or stupid stuff like this, constantly taking things out of context. It's ridiculous to act as if – first of all, the insinuation in this tweet is that the president's just out having a hell of a grand old time and not taking care
he's
of the country.
He's out having a ball while we're toiling away in the basement, and then he's putting us down.
Yes. In the meantime, you know, Congress is going to go on their summer recess soon. Yeah, it's beyond ridiculous. And what so for this, our Jackass of the Week award goes to Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa. Sir, you really do need to give it up.
Americans die each year because they can't afford health insurance. There has to be a better way.
A few years ago, then-Senator Obama said he was a proponent of a single-payer health care system. He got a lot of applause for that line. Now, as president, Mr. Obama says he wants to build around the system we have, the system that's dominated by insurance companies. Mr. President, the insurance companies have stiffed us time and time again. Don't give in to them. Yes, we know they're powerful. Yes, they have lots of money and lots of political clout, but don't sell us short. It's time to get the insurance companies and their costly red tape out of our healthcare system. Lives depend on it. Please, support a national single-payer healthcare solution. Medicare for all. Everybody in, nobody out.
Call the White House now. 1-800-578-4171. www.onepayer.net.
Tick, 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 tick. Massive heat waves.
Heat waves. Severe drought.
Tick, tick,
tick.
Devastating, devastating hurricane.
Tick, tick,
tick, tick,
tick.
Our future.
Tick,
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 tick.
To you.
Tick.
Go to fightglobalwarming.com while there's still time.
Fight global warming before it's too late.
Have you added up all the hidden costs behind Walmart's prices? The estimated $1.8 billion taxpayers shell out for health care because Walmart doesn't cover their employees. The lost wages of 1.6 million women who had to take Walmart to court to get paid the same as men. The countless manufacturing jobs lost while America's largest corporation became America's biggest importer of Chinese goods. Behind Walmart's profits, the middle class pays the price. America can't afford it any longer.
888-228-4494, 888-228-4494, or at Jim Alger on the Twitter. We are going to talk right now about a subject that is going to probably start some arguments, or I'm sure I should have some interesting discussion here. Is the GOP stoking terror in the United States? Are they fanning the flames? Now, I know that you know, Boss Limbaugh lost his flippin' mind and said that this is all the left wing's fault, but I think it's just a lot of reflecting and projecting personally. I've never seen a time when, in my lifetime, when so much hatred has been stirred up. This past week we had the tragedy at the National Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., 5,286 feet away from the White House steps. And but for a brave security guard who puts himself out there in the line of fire, and as Chris Matthews said the other day, these are the guys who get shot. These are the guys, there's no one protecting them. There's nothing, no one to save them. They're the ones that take the bullet to protect us. And this guy opens the door to allow this elderly gentleman in the room. And then the guy turns around and shoots him. And apparently he was hell-bent on doing more. Now, clearly this guy's nuts. And I am really not going to go so far as to say that this was the right wing's fault. This guy has deep issues and apparently has for some time. He was a 9/11 conspiracy theorist. We were just discussing that on the last segment. He pretty much hated everybody. So this particular incident, I think, has to kind of be set aside from the bigger picture. But when you have the assassination of Dr. George Tiller last week, and we had a guest on the show who claimed at the time to be a friend of George Tiller. And then we had read on his website that while he claimed to be a friend, he also said that George Tiller was going to burn in hell for eternity. And, you know, these people are out of their minds. So when you have a general party, an opposition party, that is out there stoking the flames of radicalism and accusing the president of being a secret Muslim and hating America, and the vitriol that comes out against this president in such a dramatic way, is this going to have a natural effect on stoking the, you know, getting the people who might already be semi-unhinged and just taking the rest of the way off the charts? Department of Homeland Security seems to think so. They issued a report a few months ago. The GOP tried their best to quell, and Janet Napolitano actually ended up having to apologize for. But that report said that right-wing extremists were going to get more and more violent in this country with the election of Barack Obama. So it seems like these supposedly patriotic Americans should be doing something to cool things down and get more on policy and issue rather than stoking these ridiculous flames.
To add another dimension to this, I was reading about this attack and the individual and the circumstances of the attack on the Holocaust Museum, I believe. And they even meant the Anti-Defamation League even mentioned that the fact that we're in economic recession sees, you know, will end up in a rise of this type of violence. Pretty sad commentary on humanity there. But I think that when, you know, another thing that when you have economic hardship on top of all that else that may be going on in some individual's head, that might be the straw.
Amazing they managed to get enough money to buy their guns, though.
This was quite an individual. He had
This particular guy's a nutcase.
Yeah, he had quite a hit list of various people that he hated that are completely unrelated. It was quite amazing.
The list would be shorter if you just included the people that he didn't hate.
This is probably true. He had also targeted conservative writers from the magazine The Standard. He this may lead to another discussion entirely, but he had been involved in law enforcement before. He had been caught with weapons before, but he hadn't committed an assault. So it gets onto the touchy subject of when we know somebody's a threat and we know they're unstable, but they haven't committed.
He had actually gone to jail for several years because he tried to kidnap somebody from the Federal Reserve.
That's right. He attempted.
He had no business having a gun.
Did not get him enough time.
Well, you know, Rush's comments, should we even respond to them, where he's saying this is a left-wing thing? Or should I just dismiss him? I think we just dismiss him.
I know. We're getting a little close to Rush's statements.
No, it's not just that. I mean, yeah, dismiss Rush, but it's not just Rush who is saying this. It almost seems to be like another talking point of the right, and it's a sad commentary that, you know, that may be true. It may not be true. It may just be something that's propagated, you know, because someone else hears it. No, I think that's a great idea to excuse the inexcusable, and that is that this man, his actions were hate-oriented, and somehow, you know, the fact that people get on TV and they say lies and they distort facts again and again and again, and then when, you know, it comes out that, oops, somebody took me seriously and they went and shot and killed someone, then all of a sudden it seems like they go back and kind of try and say, oh, well, we didn't mean that, you know, and it's a distortion and it's inexcusable, quite honestly, and offensive that under the guise of expression that this should even be allowed to have happened.
Should not be allowed to say such things, that Rush should legally not be allowed to
well,
blame
let's,
this
let's
on the
get it off Rush.
No. I think that when you're in the public eye, you know, and if you can't say the F word on, you know, radio and TV by
you can't.
FCC rules, and you can't scream fire under, you know, in a crowded movie theater, and you can't say, I want to kill the president. Those are things. We have freedoms in this, you know, country, but it is freedom with responsibility. And, you know, I know that the Holocaust guy is one thing, but Dr. Tiller, on Fox, you had, I can't even remember the count, but they're commentators, and they are not journalists, their commentators had called Dr. Tiller the baby killer for so many times that, you know, at some point, yeah, you do have to kind of call into question the fact that, are they inciting violence? Are they inciting these actions?
I'll agree with you that they're hypocritical. When he came on and he said that he does not condone the attack on Dr. Tiller, and then he called him a baby killer, an infant killer. Okay, so then you're saying that this person is slaughtering children, but it's not okay to kill them? I'm pleased. If we were to tell someone that, hey, this guy's heading with an AK-47 to a playground, nobody would have any problem with that person being shot. So they, but then again, on the flip side of that, do we tell them that they legally cannot say? I mean, where do you draw that line?
Oh, I know. I think that you once again, I don't know that in a free society you can't. Well, clearly, once you make an actual threat, for example, threatening to cause physical harm to the President of the United States, or frankly, any person, is against the law. You can't do it. It carries different penalties depending on who that person was. You threaten to harm me, it's, you know, you might get West Tech security looking at you. You threaten to hurt a Supreme Court justice or the president or a Congress member, you're liable to get a very unpleasant visit from the Secret Service. So I think there are a varying degree. There's also real threats and not real ones, and people who are just being stupid. But when, you know, there's also been an unwillingness of the mainstream media to just say what we're worried about.
Where do you draw the line between irresponsibility and integrity to journalism, or even the fact that you have a podium on TV? And, you know, as far as the threat to one person, okay, I buy your argument that, you know, you can't go around saying I'm going to kill the president, but we also have laws that say, you know, you can't want to kill all Jews go ahead.
We got to kind of, you know, even in this conversation, how about we stop saying the words? You can't do that. So we've got to start getting this conversation in line with, you know, trying to understand. I think that in a free society, you really cannot prevent people from fanning flames. But make no mistake, the right wing, the Limbaughs, the Hannitys, will put their arms up and say they had nothing to do with it.
I'm all for free speech, but I have a big problem when you can't say that F word on radio or TV, but you can get up there every single night like Rush, like Beck, like O'Reilly has, and you can completely distort the facts and distort the truth and, you know, spout your bigotry and racism and your mistrust of the government, and then excuse yourself from all and any responsibility. I mean, that is appalling to me. And, you know, to have to say incendiary statements and pass them off as absolute truth via the talking points is, it's inexcusable and it's an abomination.
Well, that is a valid argument that we should be discussing, and that's what I'm getting at. I think we do have a responsibility to call people out for this when they do this type of stuff. When you've got people writing articles in the supposedly, you know, left-wing New York Times that's supposedly so far left and loves Obama and never says a bad thing about him, and it's all unicorns and roses and daisies, and, oh, wait, they're publishing opinion pieces to say that Barack Obama is a secret Muslim? You know, it's like, this is where it's like, wow, you guys are stupid. I mean, first of all, why would we?
But this goes beyond stupid. Is my thing.
Stuck on the supposed part. They are trying to New York Times.
They are trying to. First of all, here's what they are doing. They're appealing to the worst instincts among us. By accusing Barack Obama of being a secret Muslim, they want you to equate the word Muslim with 9/11 and with the people who attacked us, and therefore bad, evil, trying to kill you. You wouldn't want to be around them. And let's tie these two people together. It didn't work during the campaign. It didn't work during the first the primaries, the general campaign. It hasn't worked since. I don't think it's ever going to work, but what it does do is it talks to the echo chamber of the people who feed on this to justify their own hatred and their own existence. These people are, you know, extremists that don't care, and they're mentally imbalanced and they don't care. And when you look at the last time in history this kind of vitriol was being spewed out by the right, I might add. They were handing out flyers in Dallas, Texas, the morning of November 22nd, with the picture of President Kennedy saying, wanted dead or alive for treason. And 2 hours later, he was dead. Let's stop for a second, because this is what we're talking about. And everyone likes to dance around this subject. But this is what we're talking about. Does this country want to live through that again? Do we even imagine? Do we want to even imagine?
The fact that people were picketing? And is that what you're speaking about?
Do we even want to imagine what would happen to this country or this world if something were to happen to the President of the United States? Is this really what we want? And I'm talking to you, Mr. Limbaugh. I'm talking to you, Mr. Hannity. I'm talking to you, Mr. O'Reilly. I'm talking to you, Michelle Malkin. I'm talking to all of you. Is this what you want? Because this is what we're talking about. Nobody wants to actually say the words, but this is what we're talking about. And I
know
right now, given where the world economy is, for no other reason, given where the world's economy is, given how fragile things are in this country and around the world, I don't know what would happen the next day. And I don't want to know. I don't ever want to know. I remember where I was the day that Ronald Reagan was shot. I was in school, and they walked in, and they closed school. And it happened about a month before the Pope was shot. And this was something, and around that time, Anwar Sadat from Egypt was also was successfully assassinated. And you wonder what happened to people that they could have so much hatred in them to throw their lives out to go and do this to someone. And President Obama is protected, thank God, by the United States Secret Service, but they're not perfect. And it's not just the President of the United States we're talking about. That would be the most dramatic thing, and I think one that would really do a lot of harm to this country. And so if you're not trying to stoke these morons that are doing this kind of stuff, that would be interested in doing something like this, then what are you doing? Are you thinking that you can control this fire somehow? I mean, this really, it reminds me of someone who just wants to go and they want to clear the brush in their backyard by setting it on fire because they can control it with their water canisters.
What gets me is that they peddle their hate speak as their currency, and that is exactly what we are talking about, because if we paid them more money to go and say, listen, can you guys clear this up? Can you, you know, speak the facts? Can you be more truthful? Then I can almost guarantee you that they would do it, you know, as a network. This is Murdoch's working, Murdoch's yellow journalistic horrible comedy excuse for a network, and it's all to get the ratings, because
I think
they on every night, it's just despicable.
To put it on one person is being way too simplistic.
No, I'm not putting it just on Murdoch at all. You know, I do believe that, you know, Beck O'Reilly and all of the people that they have as, you know,
I don't correlate Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh, even Michelle Malkin. I don't correlate them with white supremacists and neo-Nazis and skinheads.
But they play to that base. You know, I'm sorry, but they were calling Obama un-American. They've been calling him un-American. They've been calling him Muslim. They have made fun of the fact that his middle name is Hussein. And who do you think that, you know, plays to? Who do you think that they are trying to, you know, get and incite and invigorate as their base, because it darn sure isn't the people with a brain and who can go and read a newspaper or look up things up on the internet.
And, well, I would say they do a lot of stuff on the internet, but 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494, catch you in the back side of the break.
No company wants to go through this. But we're not witnessing the end of the American car. We're witnessing the rebirth of the American car. General Motors needs to start over in order to get stronger. There was a time when 8 different brands made sense. Not anymore. There was a time when our cost structure could compete worldwide. Not anymore. Reinvention is the only way we can fix this. And fix it, we will. So here's what the new GM is going to be. Fewer, stronger brands. Fewer, stronger models. Greater efficiencies. Better fuel economy. And new technologies. Leaner, greener, faster, smarter. This is not about going out of business. This is about getting down to business. Because the only chapter we're focused on is Chapter 1.
General Aviation serves 5,000 small to mid-sized airports, providing an economic lifeline for communities across America. Millions of jobs and large and small businesses depend on General Aviation. A Washington, D.C. plan for costly new fees could shut down community airports and impact over 1 million jobs. Your help is needed. Get involved. General Aviation serves America. Let's keep it that way.
888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. At Jim Alger on the Twitter, we are talking about the question of, is the GOP stoking terror in the United States? And I was talking to Mike off the air, and he is having a problem with my current position.
A problem with your current position. I think you're getting a little extremist calling that, making the statement basically that the GOP is practically calling for the assassination of the president. That's going a bit.
No, I'm not saying that. We're saying they're stoking the flames.
You are insinuating. Okay, they're not calling for it. They're fanning the flames.
They're fanning the flames and they're being irresponsible.
They're fanning the flames. Irresponsibility and politics, unfortunately, go hand in hand.
And you know what? This actually brings up a good point. We were talking about this during the break, and that is that, is it just that we're seeing it more? Is it possible? This has always been doing this, but it's just more out in the open. We can see it on the internet. You know, every trained monkey has their own radio show. We're prime examples of that.
You know, during the break, you were making the point that the Secret Service had reported a much higher than usual amount of threat against the current president than before. And I, of course, was saying that, you know, the President Reagan actually was shot in himself.
There's been attempted assassinations against each of the last 5 presidents.
We see a lot of very, how to put this, disingenuous blaming and trying to attack the people that are elected just because they're on the other side of the fence. We're seeing that against our governor. He's been being blamed for shutting down social services, for doing everything evil. He's an evil man. He's not responsible for this financial crisis. If you want to criticize him, criticize something specific
but
that
see,
he did.
This is what I'm.
Don't
it's
paint
funny
him as an evil man.
How interesting that you're making my argument for me, because that's what I'm saying about the president. Stop making him an evil man. If you want to criticize his policies,
I'm not saying that they're not.
Criticize the policies.
To say that this is GOP and specifically and only GOP doing, this is part of the
first
game
of all, I
politics.
Never said that.
Are you saying that GOP is putting out
in this particular case? They are.
They're fanning the flames of people to attack the President of the United States. It's a bit overkill.
Well,
are they being disingenuous? Of course they are.
They
go beyond disingenuous, though, and that is my point. You know, you have millions of viewers. You have a responsibility if you're going to carry or, you know, purport yourself to be a news outlet and a news channel, then report the news, or at least, you know, do something that vaguely resembles the news. Don't sit there and lie and propagate these myths and distortions, especially the irresponsible ones, because then you have this, oh my gosh, shocked mentality, this righteous indignation of, you know, oh, how could this have happened? And then go and carry it off, you know, as, oh, this guy was leftist. Seriously, at some point, someone has to say, really, I have a brain and it works. Clearly yours does not. And I know what the facts are. And they have an obligation. There's an obligation there.
Mike, you had a point.
I had a point, but it perhaps it got lost in the woods. But
sorry.
I was going to say something to the effect of, on the larger scope of things, getting even beyond just politics, we've put way too much of a focus on rights and not enough focus on responsibilities. You see it in our schools. You see it in this law enforcement issue we're talking about. You see it in the news and you see it in politics. And I don't think it's something that you can legislate. It's a cultural phenomenon. But we do have to own up to responsibility.
Well, and I think that people have responsibility when they are, if they're going to go after someone, especially with, if it's personal, it should be fact-based, or at least have some basis to of which to go after someone. And we do have to be sensitive to what people are going to translate out of what is said. I mean, look, the right wing is going after David Letterman right now for a stupid joke he said on a late night show. And they're trying to make a hullabaloo over that. Left wing essentially got Don Imus thrown off the air on MSNBC and took his radio show away because getting a little bit of blood wasn't enough. They had to get it all. What's interesting is on both these cases, it's groups that say, hey, I was personally offended. I want to go after this. Well, how come they don't show the same level of consideration towards the President of the United States, towards Supreme Court justices, towards even members of Congress? I mean, and it goes all the way. When you've got Chuck Grassley, our jackass of the week, derogatorily yapping at the President of the United States on Twitter like an idiot, what happened to decorum in Washington? I swear to God, there are a bunch of kids up there.
I like that term, decorum, having a conversation where you're disagreeing with a person, but unfortunately this has degraded to the point where you're trying to kill the messenger. You're trying to put the person down. You're trying to say that if it goes to him, we're all doomed. And that's where we run into trouble. This is where you get the type of thing of trying to paint Barack as a Muslim and then trying to paint that as even in and of itself as a disqualifying factor and to try to associate that with terrorism. Rather than argue your point straight.
Yeah, but see, this is my point. Maybe this is what I'm getting at. The fringes have always done stupid stuff. The left, the far left, the far right, they've always been out there and they've always done ridiculous things. That the moderates, the people in the middle can say, hey, that's not right. But as I was alluding to earlier in the show, more and more we're seeing this so-called, at least on the GOP side, mainstream, the leadership, doing the same behavior. As I said earlier, when you got idiots like Sarah Palin saying that Barack Obama pals around with terrorists, I don't care if you're saying it just to win an election and you know better. The fact that you are saying it just to win an election and you know better is even worse. So when I have said this before, nothing worse is said about politicians than is said by other politicians.
I know you guys don't like the fact that I rag on Rush Limbaugh so much, but I just want to say, okay, Here's why I have a problem with him. In a recent USA Today Gallup poll, 53% of adults could not specify the main person who speaks for the Republican Party. The plurality viewed Rush Limbaugh as the party's leader. So, therefore, I hold his views as far as what he speaks publicly, in a higher echelon for that, and I think that he has, some accountability. That in the same poll, they, I'm sorry, what?
He's
Al Sharpton then is the spokesman for the Democratic Party.
No, this was a poll, though. This is not something, these are not numbers I'm just making up. They also had Vice President Dick Cheney as second, and God knows, we've spoken about him at length in the past, and Senator John McCain He got McCain. I'm sorry.
First of all, Dick Cheney and John McCain should I put in the same sentence, because John McCain, I disagree with the man's policies, but John McCain is not a flamethrower by any stretch of the imagination.
No. This was in specific, question of who is in charge of the GOP. And the 6% got McCain and Gingrich, and they need to have their words carefully examined.
But
in as much as Obama's are.
Did not have, no, just because people view them as leaders, I wouldn't say that. That poll basically said that the GOP has no leadership. No one came up with a clear.
A little comic relief here. Jay Leno asked people on the street, who lives on Pennsylvania Avenue? And he got blank. And he asked, well, who lives in a pineapple under the seat? Oh, SpongeBob.
Yeah, that was
so
hilarious.
To say that the people don't recognize the leadership, and therefore this is a bit too far. You know, sometimes the average person...
Not really, because SpongeBob doesn't sit there and say that our president is Islamist and is un-American.
People's no. Recognition of
what
the leadership...
You know what? I will say this much. And we're going to break here in 2 minutes. But I think we'll close with this, and that is that the Democratic Party needs to remember that we won. The majority of Americans agree with us. The vast majority of Americans agree with the President of the United States. So we don't have to keep fighting the campaign. There are certain people we're not going to win their hearts and minds. But I think to call them out on their nonsense and to fight their BS and their vitriol is important. But at the same time, we have to try, and it's hard, and I don't do it all the time, but we have to try not to drop into the same exact mud pile that they're in. I was watching Rush Limbaugh go on about how that this shouldn't be a divisive thing, this shouldn't be about Republican or Democrat, that he doesn't like all the acrimony. And I almost spit my soda through my nose because he's the one that pushes all the acrimony. So it does strike me as strangely bizarre. When we get back from the break, we're going to have a special comment on the United States economy and how things are actually starting to look up a little bit. We are beginning to show signs of life and signs of improvement, although everyone else on the right seems to feel like we've failed, and our old buddy Newt Gingrich has said that we've already failed. So forget rooting for failure now, as Rush did. Now Newt's just saying we flat out failed. So it's going to be a little bit of fun there. On the other side of the break, we'll have that conversation. See you guys back in a few minutes.
It's me, Gotta Laugh, from the Political Carnival blog, and here I am to recap the week in politics via Twitter. And now it's time for the next installment of Palinese for Beginners, or as I like to call it, what the f*** is Sarah Palin talking about? Sarah Palin tweeted, I'm on my way to intro Michael Reagan and hear him speak about what his wise, innovative father, President Reagan, would do in these challenging times. Followed by, great talk by Michael Reagan tonight, encouraged by his conservative ideals and common sense. Common sense? Who knew Sarah, of all people, would promote our radio show? It turns out Sarah Palin plagiarized a speech by Newt Gingrich, to which Cogro X tweeted, what a Palin plagiarized Gingrich speech sounds like. Frankly, also, frankly, also, frankly, also, frankly, Texas Voodoo said, oh, Lord, the saddest bit is that even while plagiarizing, she manages to introduce incoherence. Mike Gerke added, who plagiarizes Newt Gingrich? That's like illegally downloading Jessica Simpson, a cry for help. And just for good measure, I've included a bonus tweet about Bristol from BuzzFlash. Bristol Palin tells Christian teen moms, I believe abstinence is the Lord's will between bouts of wild, sweaty hormonal sex. And, of course, my tweet spot wouldn't be complete without a couple of very special Meghan McCain tweets. Nothing makes you feel like an adult like buying curtains. Meg Mac, you're 24. You've been an official adult for 3 years. You're a journalist and an occasional talking head. You've participated in a presidential campaign. Curtains are the last thing that should define your adulthood. And then she goes on.
Love my dad. He makes me laugh so hard. He is so proud of the fact he is one of the most followed people on Twitter. It is pretty awesome.
Micmac, he's followed because people know they need to keep an eye on him. But what do I know?
But it's the equivalent of Mr. Toad's wild ride when you talk about all the spending.
They won't work.
What Obama gets done doesn't have to remain forever.
And the massive, fiscally irresponsible Democratic budget.
Their plan has already failed.
I find it incredibly ironic that the GOP, which first told us there was no looming economic slowdown and subsequently denied the recession until no sane person could, is no longer telling us we are going to fail, but that we already have. Indeed, the party that for years told us to criticize our president in the time of war was tantamount to treason, and to question fiscal policy was to be rooting for the country to fail, has not only been rooting for failure, but has now declared it openly. Newt Gingrich, clearly the most intelligent of the three stooges battling for the title of honorary grand poobah of the party of no, has checked his belief in the American people at the door and declared we have already failed.
Their plan has already failed.
It's unbelievable and yet understandable. The only card these guys have is to convince Americans that there is no hope of things improving. But unfortunately for the GOP, and fortunately for us, once again, the facts don't seem to line up with the rhetoric of the Republicans. There is no doubt this economy is still contracting, but there is also little doubt that we are seeing signs of life, that America's resilience is beginning to shine through. The stock market has recovered all of its 2009 losses and seems to be stabilizing for some time now. Gone are the volatile days of 600-point swings or seemingly never-ending bad news. Existing home sales rose 3% in April, suggesting the real estate market may have hit bottom. Even if it hasn't, it certainly appears to be in the neighborhood. Undoubtedly, there will be an uptick in foreclosures in the upcoming months as moratoriums wane. But it wasn't just foreclosures that hurt the economy. Rather, a series of events, including the seizing of the credit markets that created the crash of 2008. Real estate agents from across the country, New York, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Richmond, Chicago, Kansas City, Dallas, and San Francisco, all report an uptick in sales, bolstering the notion that the real estate market is at or near bottom. This past Wednesday, a Federal Reserve snapshot of economic conditions issued found that the downward trend of the economy is showing signs of moderating. Signs of stabilization in the job market are emerging, according to several private surveys, as restaurants, mortgage servicers, and healthcare centers step up hiring. Even the manufacturing sector, which has been hit so devastatingly, is seeing signs that job losses may be moderating. Retail employment was mixed, with some regions like Boston and Cleveland reporting stability. Many analysts predict the economy is contracting at around 1 to 3% this quarter. That's huge, as in the depths of what will certainly eventually be called the Depression, we saw contraction rates at over 6%. While those on the right will tell us that we have already failed, we must believe. Believe in our nation and our neighbor as much as we believe in ourselves. Remember that the flag we wave stands for a shining beacon of the hope of people who wanted things better for their children than themselves, and willing to unite as one and die for just the idea that life could be better. A beacon of hope when that was all people had. Then we must take that belief and pass it on, helping our neighbors when we can, volunteering at a shelter, give when and if you can. Engage your politicians and tell them to quit bickering. They need to either lead, follow, or get the hell out of our way. It is time for this nation to rise up and take care of our own. And the more the Hate America crowd of Hannity, Limbaugh, Malkin, and Gingrich say we can't, from east to west, north to south, this nation must rise up with one voice and utter that time-honored creed. Yes, we can. Yes, we can rebuild our economy. Yes, we can rebuild our workforce. Yes, we can educate our kids. Yes, we can provide health care for all Americans. Yes, we can. We must and we will. Because in the words of Barack Obama, we are not a red America or a blue America. We are the United States of America, and we are on our way back.
We'll be back in the-